Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and baby, Jesus! Help us.
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah, Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in California.
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
It's Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope for this cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doc, you homie. Fuck that. Black dude, holler.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J. Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. It is Thursday, June 21st, 2012. And, man, we're 2 days away from Tournament of Death, and I'm going to get into that a little bit later. Not only that, I'm just coming out of the gate. I also have back on with me tonight, I will have one of my favorite guests that I've had thus far in my almost two-year run of Yakuza Kick Radio. I will have back on tonight Nick Burke. And, well, I think to start the show, the first thing I want to talk about for sure, because tonight there's something else going on. I'm sitting on my TV and I'm looking at Van Gundy's shiny ass head. Let me tell you, fucking game five, NBA finals, my motherfucking Miami Heat going in there against these fucking Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, man, I have so much to say about this. Just, you know, I can't even. Well, first off, I mean, obviously, my reoccurring theme has been this.
Fuck you, Thunder! You can suck my dick!
And outside of that, come on. LeBron James, three-time NBA MVP. Do you think that all I hear, all I've ever heard, fucking all this year, all this playoffs, all this, all the refs are playing for the Heat, You don't think a three-time MVP can for 1 second outplay the other team? Now, just because this fucking dude went on there and he put up a special, which, by the way, was done for charity. Well, not for charity. It was obviously done for publicity, but the proceeds from that hour special he did to announced that he was going to Miami, went to charity. So he was such a terrible person that's what we're going to all stake our opinions on LeBron on from now on out. Okay. I heard nothing but refs this, refs that, oh, whining, this, that. And we'll get to fucking whining. Well, we'll get to whining in a second because I've had enough of this fucking whining talk because every fucking star that's ever been in the NBA and a lot of the who just tried to be stars and just fell off. But bottom line is the guy who everybody is blowing was fucking also king. He might be king of the NBA. He might be one of I'd say the best basketball player that's ever graced the court. He's also been the biggest whining bitch that's ever stepped on the fucking hardwood. So we'll get to that dude in a minute because people can't get off his top no matter how many years he's been out of the league, no matter how little he gives a fuck about the NBA at this point, no matter how much he gave a fuck about it then. And money hungry and fucking greedy and much of a scumbag as he was, but we're going to judge a guy on his decisions. But anyway, all I heard was, yeah, LeBron is playing the refs. That's all he's doing. Oh, LeBron can't come through in the clutch. Oh, shit. Looks like LeBron's fucking really took over in the fourth quarter quite a bit of times during this fucking playoffs, hasn't he? Huh. And then I heard from people, you know, such as Ed O'Mac, that, you know, doesn't matter. You know, you could bask in your playoff glory all you want because as soon as they get to the finals against the Spurs or the Thunder, which, you know, wasn't decided yet because we already wrapped our shit up. But, either the Spurs or the Thunder, you get in there with them, they're going to take you out. I can't wait till they take those fucking guys out. I can't wait till you get to the finals and get upset by the West team. Not even knowing who the West team was, they had us beat and buried. And then he even makes a proclamation, you guys won't win any more than two games in the finals. Okay, so in case anybody has been lacking on their watching in the playoffs, we are now going in game five. We're up 3-1. That's three games us, one game Thunder. And we win the game tonight, and it's fucking over. And LeBron's got his first ring, and people could stop talking about motherfuckers not having rings. Now, let's get into this other fucking dude that everybody loves, Michael Jordan. Everybody's got to bring up Michael Jordan. He couldn't win enough titles in his fucking career and then move on at all because motherfuckers can't stop bringing him up. Like, the NBA doesn't exist anymore. It's just, what did Jordan do? What would Jordan do? It's like the Jesus thing. It's like, well, what would Jesus do? Well, what would Jordan do? And all the same letters apply and everything. It would just, I'm just looking at all those stickers like that. They're not even talking about Jesus no more. That's all. What would Jordan do? What would Jordan do? Oh, LeBron's good? Oh, I don't think so. He doesn't have all Jordan's titles. Oh, yeah? Well, he doesn't did with Jordan. First off, Jordan, his team was stacked. Every fucking title he won, his team was stacked. He never carried a fucking team on his back. He's, again, I don't doubt that he's probably the best player that ever played in the NBA. No, I would say definitely the best player that's ever played in the NBA. He was also the biggest fucking crybaby whining motherfucker with 35 points under his belt while whining. He fucking flopped all fucking over the place. Let's not fucking play games here with this LeBron shit. Oh, LeBron's flopping. Oh, LeBron's faking. He's got the refs in his fucking pocket. Michael Jordan did more flopping than him. Get the fuck out of here, dude. Get the fuck out of here. Okay. So LeBron, everybody's got criticism. Oh, you haven't got it done yet. Okay. First year in Miami, went to the finals. Lost in the finals. Oh, you can criticize somebody going to the finals first year on a new team and then losing, right? Fucking second year in, went to the finals. Here he is up 3-1 against everybody's criticism, against everybody's hate, and everybody's want for him to not succeed. It's always the refs. It's always the refs, no matter what, because you don't want him to win. Now, why? Because of a special, right? Okay. But everybody's hero, everybody's superhero, fucking Michael Jordan, this motherfucker, and you could believe what you want. The fact is the fact. This fucking guy has ridiculous gambling problems to the point where he's one of the richest basketball players to ever play the game, or at least was. I don't know what he's got now, but the fucking guy got into such gambling debts, gambling on the NBA that he was playing in, that the NBA asked him to step down and go do some other shit. Just said, listen, if these charges are going to come up on you, if you're not in the league, you can't be charged. If you step away, everybody looks good in the end. You come back in a little while, and the NBA isn't scarred forever at the best basketball player that ever played the game to come up with gambling charges and everything else. It would be far, far worse than what Pete Rose was doing on the level of Michael Jordan. Now, Pete Rose isn't the best baseball player to ever play the game. You know, imagine, a guy, I'm not even trying to, post up who's the best baseball player ever, but imagine putting like a Mickey Mantle or, a Babe Ruth or one of those names that are just revered above and beyond. And of course, Pete Rose has his following, but, Hall of Famer should be. But imagine that level of player. Imagine the guy with the fucking gambling shit on him. So he fucking left. He posted fucking, the whole, oh, my father always wanted me to play baseball. So he went over there. He sucked at baseball. And right after the Statue of Limitations where they couldn't, very, very soon after. And, I guess it would be hard to do the math on that. Believe me, I was following it at the time, and it wasn't out of hate. I was a fucking teenager and still watching this shit in amazement. And fucking when the Statue of Limitations passed where they really couldn't bang him on that anymore, they welcomed him back. He came back and said, oh, you know what? Baseball wasn't for me and shit. He came back. Oh, because, his father wanted to play baseball. You know, the same father that got killed on the side of the road wasn't a fucking dime taken from him. Clearly a fucking hit, clearly a fucking some shit. He was killed for something, and it wasn't his fucking money, it wasn't anything. It was for principle, because there wasn't a fucking thing taken from him. His car was left there, everything in his wallet was there, everything, fucking buried, gone, fucking get him out of the way before people realize what a fucking scumbag that his son is, and the fact that his fucking son his father got fucking killed over his shit. He had to leave the fucking sport that he was the best at because of his shit. But in the meantime, Jordan gets the fucking golden boy paint job afterwards, and LeBron's the biggest scumbag ever for doing a TV special and giving the fucking proceeds to charity. So everybody needs to hop up off the dick of that. You can call Jordan the best, you can call that, but before you get on this fucking, I can't get over this fucking TV special, shut the fuck up, man. This whole fucking sports industry is all revolved around money. It always has been, always will be, especially when these guys started getting the contracts they're getting. Everybody's fucking favorite players have a contract negotiation at some point or another. And honestly, if fucking LeBron stayed in Cleveland, whether you're a Cleveland fan, whether you was born and raised in Cleveland, whether you're a mayor of fucking Cleveland, I don't give a fuck if you're Cleveland Brown. He would have been the Barry Sanders of fucking basketball if he stayed in fucking Cleveland. Wouldn't been no motherfucking titles, and his career would have ended early because he'd been banged up, carrying teams on his back without a team built around him. And again, Jordan had Scotty, Jordan had Steve Kerr, Jordan had Rodman, Jordan had, you can go on and on and on about what the fuck Jordan ended up around him. And that team had enough money and confidence and relied on him enough and put enough faith in that guy to put every single thing out that they had to build a dream team around that guy. I don't think you could find a better top to bottom fucking team in the history of the NBA than the Bulls back then. So while you're calling him the best ever, let's not forget that he had the best supporting cast to ever play in basketball. So, again, it's not to take anything away from the dude, but like, let's let up on LeBron a little bit and give him fucking credit where credit is due, for Christ's sakes. I mean, if there's anyone who when his career is said and done, they're going to start talking about who's better than Jordan, it's going to be Kobe Bryant. Right now, LeBron's a guy who's playing basketball and he's doing his thing. And fuck, man, might get his fucking first title this year. Why don't y'all get off your fucking, off a dude's dick? I mean, oh, Jordan retired. Oh, yeah. I guess the Sixer fans get to be mad because they ain't getting the title. I guess the Knicks fans get to be mad because they ain't getting the title. I guess the Bull fans get to be mad because they had the best basketball player to ever play the game, and they probably ain't going to win a title for some time now. Honestly, they would have been a lot higher in the playoffs if their star didn't get hurt in the first round and let the Sixer fans talk shit for another two rounds, because they wasn't worth shit to go past the motherfucking first round if Rose wasn't hurt. Listen, that's not fucking bullshit. Y'all want to dance around, and then I get motherfuckers like dude Latin Dragon. I like the dude. But, we got into the whole thing because, he hates LeBron. He can't stand him, and his all of this is his hairline and whatever the fuck else his issue is. Well, to make a comment to me like I was raised better than to like a team outside of my state is probably one of the most ignorant fucking statements I've ever heard. Because number one, you're speaking out of the mouth of a Philly fan. So to say that any fan of Philly, and this is no disrespect to just people who like Philly or, any team from Philly, but let's get real. Are we really going to peg everybody in fucking Philly, everybody who likes a Philadelphia team, as raised right? We're going to say, well, you like a team in the fucking right state. Yeah, you was born in Philly and you're an Eagle fan, so you were raised right. I beg to fucking differ. I beg to fucking differ. So by that logic, how are the people in Alabama acting who were raised right? How are the people in Rhode Island acting who were raised right? What do they do to display how right they were raised? What direction should they go towards the east, like Mecca? Should they pray to the team towards the east, like the Muslims? What should they do with the knowledge of, I was raised right, so I like the team in my state? Well, by that fucking standard, I would only like Bruce Springsteen, John Bon Jovi, fucking Billy Joel, I think Lady Gaga's from Jersey. Sinatra. These are the only people I'm allowed to listen to, because why? I'm from Jersey. I got to keep it real. So I can't like anything outside of that. No, dude, I was born and raised a fucking San Francisco 49er fan. Yeah, I've gone through a lot of different things as far as the basketball thing. I'm not going to get into all that, but I'm a straight-up Heat fan. So beyond the fact of what state I'm from, really, you're fucking born in a fucking state, so everybody who's fucking born in whatever state is just married to that. And I guess if you're born in a state where you don't have a baseball, basketball, football team, you should just fucking hate sports. And you should like, I don't know what you should like, you know? Oh, I only like college sports because we don't have a real team. So I guess that's the logic you're going with there. And it's just fucking a ridiculous mindset to go with. Well, I was raised right. Well, I mean, I'm not even going to get into that any more than that, because I can say a few more comments on the same person's logic on how they were raised right on some stuff that they've said to me in private. And I would argue they were definitely not. So it's cool. Again, And there's no hate against dude. I think he's a cool dude and all that. But, like, it's statements like that that I just, you know, whether I was standing in front of him or, you know, over the phone or text or over the radio or whatever, I would address that shit as bullshit. Like, you ain't gonna – I get really, really tired of the war. What are you, from San Francisco? Yep. Yeah, that's where I'm from. So, whatever, dude. Whatever. I'm a fucking Giant fan for life. Yeah, these are the same people that'll fucking, you know – rain fucking batteries from the fucking stadium ceiling in Philadelphia because our team sucks and we're so drunk and angry that we can't stand it anymore and we're just gonna fucking try to murder somebody in the thing. We don't want to be Eagle fans, but we're kind of forced to because we live here, so we're just gonna rain fucking batteries from the heavens. You know, but you were raised right. At least you like the team in your state. You were raised right. Puke, like the one guy that puked on the fucking little girl and shit on purpose. Yeah, you were raised right. You at least like the team in your state. I can't hate on you. Anyway, the fucking finals are tonight. Well, we're up 11-8 right now. I would love to still be on the air if we do close this shit out. I guess we'll see. That's a long time to be talking, but we'll see. And fucking man, I've had enough of this bullshit talk about my motherfucking boys over here. And they're a badass team. I think LeBron and fucking Wade are one of the best 1-2 punches in the fucking league. And I think they proved it enough so to have been here. Now, Kevin Durant is a fucking animal. I mean, he is one of the best basketball players that are playing the game today. There's no maybes about it. You give this guy 2 inches of breathing room and he's nailing a shot in your face. I mean, it's just no denying the talent like that. You know, Westbrook, he's great. But again, you ain't going to fuck around and just bury the motherfucking Miami Heat because you didn't like the LeBron James commercial. You can get over yourself and you can cry when he wins, and then you can scream about how the refs were wearing Heat color. It is what it is. But if the fucking there's calls that go both ways in every game. If the fucking calls went the same way that they did, and sure, we got beat on calls too. But if the Thunder were winning the series, wouldn't nobody be talking about no bullshit calls? Nothing. And a lot of these games came down to final shots and, you know, within the last minute of the fourth quarter, or shots going in or shots not going in. And when they didn't go in, the fucking Thunder lost the game. That shot goes in, nobody says shit about a foul, and everybody's fucking happy. Well, at least the Heat haters are fucking happy. This is what I mean. This is a bunch of bullshit where everybody's like, nothing matters. Oh, it's all refs. Oh, refs. Oh, see, the game's fixed. The NBA wants the Heat to win. Why would that be? Why would the NBA want the Heat to win? They took the fucking team out of Seattle, moved them to fucking Oklahoma City, had the team sold over there. Why would they not want that young up and coming team to support fucking the league's moves when Seattle's all fucking hyped up and angry and trying to get their team back? Why wouldn't they do that? So I don't know. Anyway, I got my guest on, so I'm going to break off of this, my basketball shit talk, and bring back on Nick Berg.
Hello. How are you?
What? All right, man. What's going on?
What's up? Cool. Chilling. Just chilling. I'm sorry, I interrupted your NBA Finals talk. I didn't mean
to.
No.
I was pretty much, I had to wrap it up at some point. I would have ran and raved until this game was over.
I see. I haven't been following the finals or nothing. I should have been following it, but I just gave up after the Sixers lost. So
that's what Sixer fans should do.
That's it seems like we do that for every sport during every season, like every postseason. We just give up. Fans and the players. Everybody just gives up.
Yeah, it happens. It's just the fans that hang on for the next two rounds and then talk shit on the teams that are still in it, like that, you know. Nothing matters anymore. It's like the refs make all of this happen, and I don't know nothing because my team's gone. It's like, all right.
I mean, that's the only cool way to really be like a true fan of, like, you know, the team, is when you're like, you know, your home team or your favorite team is out of it. You know, then you can kind of be unbiased, and then you're really picking like the good team. You know, so that's the only good way, you know, to do it. But
yeah. Crazy stuff. Well, last I had you on, a lot of crazy stuff with the audio went on, and it was pretty difficult on our ends and stuff, and I still can't explain what happened because, you know, I've been playing around with it for the past, you know, 2 weeks or whatever, and it seems to be okay, so hopefully everything's all right. When we got cut off last, you were recapping the Judge Judy thing.
Where did I leave off on that? I do know that.
I don't know, but it was somewhere towards the end of when, you know, she was kicking the car and everything else. And I think we were getting to the point of, you know, what happened on the aftermath of everything.
Okay. Well, did I explain, did I explain the actual, you know, show of Judge Judy, or was I just giving the detailed report of what
happened? You didn't go,
that led up to it?
You didn't go into the show whatsoever. We didn't get that far yet.
All right. Yeah, so I guess basically, then I do remember I was pretty much at the point where I walked out and I saw the girl was kicking my car, and she, you know, hit me, and, you know, like I got my car and then noticed that it was damaged. You know, when I got home, I noticed all the real damages. So basically, you know, to recap the whole entire thing, you know, I just went out on a date with a chick, you know, thinking that she was going to hook me up with getting into movies and stuff, and turned out that she didn't have a job, and we just had a bad night. She ended up getting mad at me and being rude to me. I left her in Atlantic City to try and find her own way home, and then I got my car beat up, and so basically left it at that. The next day I contacted her, told her she will pay for the damages to my car, and she was denying it and everything. So I just said, okay, well, you know, cameras don't lie, so I'm going to go down to the casino, file a complaint. Went down to the casino. She called the casino as I was down there making the complaint and realized that I was for real, so she texted me right away. All right, I understand, you know, what's going on. Fine, I will pay for it. You know, she said that she's going to pay for it. I figured, okay, cool, I'm going to have my money paid for, I mean, my car paid for, and I'll go get the estimate and then send it to her, and that'll be that. So I got the estimate done, sent it to her. I still had the police report or the report, you know, with the casino and everything, and it was like $3,500 worth of damage, like, you know, that she did to my car. And so I said, you know, pay for it, and then I won't press charges on you for assault, for hitting me. I figure that's the only way I can try and get my car paid for if I have something against her. You know, so then she's like, oh, I don't know if I'll be able to come up with that money. And she gave me every excuse under the sun to not pay for that thing, you know. And this went on for a couple of months. So then eventually I was just like, you know what? You said you're involved with movies or whatever. Get in touch with some producers or something for, like, one of the judge shows, and we'll go on. And just as long as I get my money, everything's fine. So she said, okay. And she tried to be, like, you know, the big, you know, hot shot by saying, I'll call up the place and get it done. I'm sorry. She called up her producer friends, and her producer friends didn't have involvement with any judge shows. So then
right.
she said that she's like, I'll get in touch with them and get us on. I'm like, well, that's stupid because, you know, I'm pressing the charges on you. I should call. I should make the first move because you can just go on their website and you submit your case and, you know, they'll
right.
take it. So she was very adamant about her, you know, doing the stuff because I guess that's the type of person that she is. She has to try and take control and show that she's somebody, which it doesn't matter to me. She doesn't have to prove nothing to me. I didn't care. But she went and did it. And then from like the very beginning, like ever, like the producers that got in touch with me were like, why is she getting in touch with us? Like, you know, and they were kind of weary about it. And they thought that was a big ruse for us to try and get money.
All right.
I'm like, nah, you know, she's just a weird person, and that's the way she wanted to do it. And so I said, go ahead and do it. You know, like I wasn't going to sit here and argue with her about it. You know, I had enough arguing with her. I was sick of her. I just, whatever, you know. So then, like, you know, they were really, like, you know, rushing on everything. Like, they wanted things to be done, like, boom, boom, boom. And, like, they wanted me to get all this, you know, like, information to them and stuff. And, like, you know, they wanted to do it within, like, a week. And it was just, like, really quick. And so I just started a job, like a regular job with a car dealership. And so I had them do an appraisal. So I had a second appraisal done on the damages of my car. So, you know, like I went and, you know, we went on the show. And it was actually pretty cool. I took another wrestler with me because I could either bring a friend or a witness, and I didn't have a witness, so I brought my buddy Teddy Fine with me. We got there the day of the night of the Grammys. So we got there when the Grammys were getting over. We were staying two blocks away from the Staples Center. That's where our hotel was. So we walked over to where the Grammys were being
held.
Oh,
shit, that in L.A.? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Everything was in L.A. And so, like, you know, we got a free trip to Hollywood, you know. And, you know, like, we got there on Sunday. Taping was on Tuesday in the late afternoon, and then I flew back home on Wednesday. So I got a couple days out of it, you know, for free. That was pretty cool. Plus, I got, you know, the end result was I won $500. So it wasn't anywhere close to getting the money I needed for my car to be fixed. But,
now,
you know, I got $500.
Now, to take you through that, first off, I played this clip right after it first happened, and I'm going to play this clip again with you on, and, you know, let me get time on that, because I don't know. I mean, it's hilarious to anyone who listens, but
right,
also there's no way that this sets a good tone for Judge Judy to like it, but I'll just play this. Hold on.
Okay.
Let me just backtrack a little bit. When I went to go pick her up, she didn't look really much like her pictures. A little fatter than normal in the pictures. I'm just being honest, okay? She wasn't as pretty as the pictures. Just wasn't really my type. But I figured she was...
Mr. Burke, I have to tell you something, sir.
Yeah.
I don't know where you think you are.
Okay.
But I'm going to disabuse you of the fact that you're on television.
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
Because you don't want to go... where you're overweight, raise your right hand. Where you may not look like your picture, raise it a little higher. Now you can put it down. I want you to remember, Mr. Burke, where you are.
Yeah.
If you can't, you can leave with good luck. Do you understand? I don't want you to think you're going to be cutesy with me. You're not auditioning for anything, sir.
I understand.
Now we understand each other a little bit better?
Yes, Your Honor.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That cunt she was. Fucking Judge Judy too. Like she had reservations about, like, you know, me and like what I did. Now the producers told me that I couldn't say that I was involved with the entertainment business at all. But, like, that's what my job is and was. Like, my job is, like, you know, shit in the entertainment business. It's pro wrestling. That's, like, I mean, yeah, I at the time I was selling cars, so I used that as my job, and I shouldn't have.
You should have been a seamstress or something. She would have been like, well, you can't sell a new car, so I guess I have to give you some money.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, her basis of giving me $500 was because she thought that I could get the place that I worked at to fix my car. Now, the place I worked at, number one, the guy was, you know, he doesn't give discounts to people who work for him. It's just, like, he just doesn't do it, because if you do it for one, you got to do it for them all, and it's all got to be equal, and to eliminate headaches, he doesn't do it. And the place I worked for, they only worked on, you know, minor stuff that they're, like, you know, if they bought a car at an auction, like, for their used cars department. That's all they did. It was such minor stuff. It wasn't like the damage I had done. Like, these were like small, like if a door bashed into your like side panel of your car, that was like the they might be able to pop that out and then, like, you know, like fix the paint job and, you know, buff it out. And that's as far as they went. And, like, she thought that, like, you know, that was good enough. So I got $500 from her. So that's like, you know, spending money, I guess, like, you know, for a week for me. And that's about it, you know. Like, I didn't really make out. I wish I would have gotten the full amount of money, because I would have been able to either fix my car or even gotten, like, another car. Like, I wouldn't have minded. As long as I got a car that wasn't worse than the vehicle that I have. And, you know, but the main thing is that was the first car I ever purchased, like, brand new. And I bought it in the year 2000, and I was very happy with that car. I liked it. I always liked it. And so there's a lot of memories to it. So I kind of wanted to keep it, but I didn't want to drive around with all these dents in it. Now, I did get, like, somebody to just pop out the dents, and, you know, it still looks horrible with all, like, you know, the scratches and, like, the dents that, like, are kind of in there still, because you couldn't get it to be perfect. But, you know, it is what it is. And, like, it's just that it's a, you know, the money that I spent on it to get fixed wasn't going to, like, you know, give me, you know, a good thing. So.
I think part of that was, I mean, some of the strategy you went in there was pretty horrible. I mean, there's like, hey, you know, somewhere in here I got to fit in how she was fatter than I thought. And then after that, I'm going to call the judge sir at least 4 times. And then, well, we'll see where it goes from there. I mean, come on. Oh, man. Lost Nick. Here we go with the shenanigans. Hopefully he calls right back in, because I don't know what just happened. Oh, man, I do not want the theme of this show to be this. So we're going to – oh, here he is. He's back.
Oh, man. Well, there we go. Starting it. Happened was I think that I had I have a headset on, and I don't know why, but Brian Logan decides to call me every fucking time I'm on this thing with you. He doesn't even listen – he doesn't have a computer to be able to listen to it, so it's like this? It's just he does it just to Brian Logan, the referee. He just calls me every time he calls me. It's just such an annoying time, and this is of course the time that he's annoying me. So it's his fault.
Right.
Anyway,
did you hear what I said last?
No, I didn't hear what you said.
Okay, so. What I said was, I mean, well, you went in with a strategy of, well, I'm going to make sure somewhere in this argument I'm going to fit in how fat she was, and then I'm going to call the judge sir 4 times, and then well, we'll see where it goes from there.
I didn't get in with the strategy to call her sir. I definitely went with the strategy to make sure that everybody knew how fat this girl was.
And you knew that would work out, right? Like, the female judge would be like, you're a fantastic person. You know, I really want to...
I knew that I was going to get buried no matter what. Because I never heard show, but I didn't know I was going to be buried that hard from the very beginning. Like, as soon as she walked out, she's like, Mr. Burke, you're smiling. And it's like,
wait. I have that 1 second clip.
Are you smiling, Mr. Burke?
There you go.
Exactly. And then, of course, And then it comes out, yes, sir. And that was like, I caught myself that time. I called her sir.
The big ass smirk and shake your head. No. Yeah, no, yes.
It was just all downhill from there, dude. It was just like, and then at that point, I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm screwed. You know, I'm going to get what I'm going to get. She already hates me. There's nothing I can do about it. I'll just have to go about it, you know, and just deal with it. I might as well go and be me. And that's what I did. I was just being me. And, of course, I get fucking shit on so bad. Like,
oh, it's a wild argument you made.
Like, that's the cool part. It was entertaining. Like,
absolutely.
You know, Tommy Dreamer said people are laughing at me, not with me, but I don't know. Maybe they're laughing at me. I don't care. But that's
I had no money on the line, so it made no difference to me. It was just like, fuck this motherfucker.
Yeah, like, and the thing is, like, dude, like it's entertainment. That's what entertainment is. You disregard any humility to yourself, and you can be entertained as long as you know somebody's laughing. And but the funny thing was at the very end, after it, like, because the girl lied about her when she talked about her side of it. Of what happened,
right.
I was trying to make out with her, and, you know, we're having a good time, and all this different shit, like, she lied about it, and she said that she ran after me, and, you know, caught up to my car. Now, this girl was wearing heels, right, and she was a good, like, deuce and a half, all right, now, for this girl to run after me, like, it was a good two football fields to the exit, you know, and then from the exit, there was two big flights of steps, and another, like, football field size to my car. Do you really think that not only is she going to be able to run that amount of space, but she's also going to be able to run that amount of space in a quick enough time to catch up to me and then stand in front of my car? Like, really, you think that? No. Like,
there's no triathlons happening there.
And, like, they edited a lot out of the thing. Like, I made it a little bit Canadian, because, well, worse than I made myself look like an idiot, I think. The girl's like, well, Judge Judy asked what we did for a living, and the girl said, like, for her, she's like, oh, I'm an executive. And I was like, you're an executive? Executive of what? 2 weeks ago, you didn't have a job, and now all of a sudden somebody's letting you make executive decisions on their company? Stop lying.
Yeah.
Like, so I called her out on a bunch of her lies, but they didn't include that. And the best part was the very, very end when they do, like, you know, the shit, like, where we give our reaction about the whole entire judgment and all, and the whole show, like, they started answering the questions, and I just kept on, like, calling her. I was like, you're a fat fucking lying cunt, and I kept on cursing, calling her that.
Jesus Christ.
And, like she couldn't answer the questions, but I kept on yelling it, so they moved me to another section of the building, and then they asked her the questions, and they brought me back. And I cut this promo, like, I wish they would have aired it, because if they would have aired the promo that I cut, it probably would have got me a job for WWE. Like, it was such like an awesome promo. I didn't curse in it, but like the way I was just destroying her and Judge Judy, it was fucking awesome. Like,
yeah, they're not gonna air that.
No.
Again,
no,
your strategy is ridiculous going into somebody else's show.
Well, once I realized, like, in the very beginning, my strategy was if she starts shitting on me from the very beginning and I know I can't win the case, just fucking, you know, try my hardest, but, you know, to still look, you know, good, but fucking try to tear them both apart too. And that's what I did. There's some parts where I told Judge Judy that she was wrong in her thinking. Like, she tried to sit there and, like, reason with the girl, and I just said, you're, like, actually, they caught a little of it. Like she was saying, something about, like Judge Judy was like, oh, there's no way that a girl, you know, would say that to somebody. And I'm like, well, she did. And then Judge Judy kept on talking. She talked over me. And then when she's done talking, I said, well, she did. I said, you weren't there. It's what happened. I said, if you want to, we can go through my phone and we can call a bunch of people. I told them the same exact story. I said, you know, it's what happened. You know, there's no way that you could tell me it didn't happen. You weren't there, you know. And then the girl went and she recanted her story, and you could tell that the way that she was telling the story, that what I'm saying happened, did happen. And then I went back and I said, see, I was like, exactly what she said is exactly what happened, and she doesn't rebuke what I'm saying. So, you know, like, it's just the way that it worked out like on TV was not really how it all played out on the thing. But I figured they're going to edit shit out. And I thought they were going to actually edit some more stuff out, because there's some stuff that made the TV like that I didn't realize was going to, because like the whole part about like, oh, I don't know where you are, these cameras are here for me. Like, I thought they were going to edit that out, because their big gripe was saying that, like, you know, Judge Judy, like, I think she did like a background check on us and saw, like, you know, that I was a wrestler and did some other shit. And like, I think that.
But she said, the only star that's here is me, or something like that.
Dude, oh, dude, I bit my tongue on that one. I was like, oh, yeah, I was in an award winning movie, and I don't think you know. Because I was in The Wrestler for a whole entire 5 seconds.
Yeah, a half a second clip if you zoom in from the crowd as well.
See, you too.
You know?
You are more of a star than her.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, she's always been a ridiculous. I've watched her shit on and off, you know. And she's always been a ridiculous person to make an argument with. She set in stone how she feels. Like, I've seen dudes get up there and be like, yeah, you know, we were in the bar, and he called me a bitch. And she's like, let me stop you right there, sir. People only call women bitches. And he's clearly not a woman. So he never called you a bitch. Let's strike that from the record. It's like, no, he called me a bitch. He'd be like, no, he did not. You're not a woman, sir. It's like, wow, I've called so many people bitches. It's ridiculous. And most of them weren't women. It's crazy. But, I mean, she's not easy to converse
with. Exactly. Like, she just has her theories on it. Now, what I should have done was, I should have gone on Judge Joe Brown. Because I had both Judge Joe Brown and Judge
he's
Judy.
He's so monotone.
Like, they were, like, fighting over, like, getting me. And, right, I mean, I pretty much, like, yeah, I was like, well, who has more money to offer? And Judge Joe Brown had only up to $3,000, and Judge Judy had up to $5,000 to offer for the payoff. So I figured I'd go with Judge Judy because she had the more money to offer for the payoff, and that was not a good idea. So now I know. Now I know, like, if I want to sue somebody on TV, I'll go on Judge Joe Brown.
Where is he filmed at?
I don't know. He's probably in New York. I mean, in California or New York, you know, like one of those. Those are the only places I
he's
can imagine
boring
they
as
are.
Fuck, though. You weren't going to get any entertainment. He's like, Mr. Burke, I got you on here today. He's like Cleveland Brown of the fucking court. Like, it's not going to work.
Right. Yeah, I don't really watch him. I don't even watch either of them, but, like, you know, Judge Judy's the more popular one, so.
Yeah, I've watched Judge Judy and some Judge Mathis, too, because he gets, like, on and off hood on people.
Wait, he gets what?
He gets, like, on and off hood with people. Like, he'll be like, I remember when I was in the street, we would have slapped the shit out of you for trying to sell drugs on my block. And like, whoa, son.
Oh, yeah. This dude, Judge Mathis, he used to be, like, a drug dealer and shit.
Yeah.
Like,
he just
like,
breaks it out here and there. Like, you wouldn't have been shit on my street. Like, whoa.
Right, he used to run the stuff. He used to be like, you know.
I love that shit. It's hilarious.
Drug boy. Yeah, that's so that's the story of Judge Judy. You know, I made like they paid an appearance fee too, a $300 appearance fee, and they were supposed to give me an extra $150 for like walking around money, and they never gave it to me, which I've been calling
some
them,
wham.
Fighting with them about for like a while, but it's just like it might be a lost cause. But that's the way the entertainment business is. They short your money. They don't give a fuck about paying it. So.
Yeah.
But
that's
that was,
crazy,
you know,
shit.
I mean, at least I get $800 out of it because I'm still waiting for CZW to pay me from Italy, which is a good grand at least.
Yeah,
and I don't think I'm ever getting it.
Yeah, I would go ahead and waive that fee because Zandig was still in charge then, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah,
dude,
not
it's
happening.
Funny because I'm. Because as soon as, like, DJ Hyde bought the letters of CCW, those are the most expensive letters, I believe, in the alphabet, CZ and W. As soon as he bought those letters, I went to DJ. I was like, all right, since John didn't pay me, are you going to pay me my Italy money? Are you going to pay me? And I also flew out Messiah and B-Boy a few times on my credit card because I had, like, with my credit card, I got good discounts through, like, U.S. Air. You know, with my discount and then a U.S. Air, like, was running specials, like, with all that stuff, like, my prices were a lot better than the ones that they were getting. And,
right.
So I put on my credit card that, and like I flew them out like a good, like, you know, maybe three or four times, and they've only paid me like once or twice each. Like,
probably some pretty big shows too. When you talk about the time frame that it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Those were times where the money was definitely there, you know, to be paid, and I just never got paid. And I mean, whether John Zandig forgot about it or not, you know, like, he still should have paid me. And I mean, I've been living life without it. And yes, it would help me because it probably is about, that probably does average out to be about $1,000, you know, between,
right.
Both of them and a couple of places I paid for. But, you know, I could definitely use it to help pay my $10,000 debt.
Well,
it happens. So.
Well, that's between John Zandig and
Jesus.
It can only hope it comes together for you, brother. Right. I don't know.
What's that sound like from Jesus?
Oh, that's from the. It was a promo that he cut. And, you know, he had Robbie Marino doing the interview, and he was outside of the arena, and it was some shit, like, leading up to, I want to say, one of the Delaware shows or something. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the most infamous CZW John Zandig interviews, and he, you know, he cut the whole promo, and Robbie Marino, and he's like fucking yoked him up and shit, and he's like, oh, my God. it was a great, great fucking little clip, and he was so hyped up, it was ridiculous. He was just throwing water everywhere, and he yelled
they,
Jesus several times.
Don't they use that in the beginning of Botchamania?
They sure should do. They sure should do.
Jesus, yeah, that's where I remember
it. I'll post the interview on your wall, like, sometime after the show or something, because it's one of the classic joints. If you don't know where it's from, I mean, you definitely should, because I'm sure you were in the building at the time.
Is that from the time frame that Robin Marino was being an interviewer?
Yes.
For CZW?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He hated that, too, because he felt that he just looked like a, you know, a pussy. Like, you know, Dave's interviewer here.
Especially when Zandig's grabbing him.
And then, yeah, because, you know, you have to, like, you know, if you're an interview guy, then you can't, you know, there's certain things you really can't do to, you know, it's all about putting the other people over. So, you know, and here he was one time wrestling, and now he's an interview guy, and he wants to wrestle, but he can't because, you know, they have him doing interview guys, doing interviews, so he can't wrestle, you know, for other independent shows and stuff, being that, you know, John has him just doing interviews. It was such like a bad position for him, but otherwise, like, John didn't have anything for him. And,
right.
Like, it kind of sucks because he was part of, like, you know, the crew before, you know, that just started because he used to do a thing with Kashmir, and there were the Kashmir brothers. And
yep.
I loved that gimmick. I loved it. Like, the way that they, you know, did what they did, I just thought it was great. And Marino, no, he wasn't world champion material, but he wasn't bad either. He was green,
right.
And, you know, but we all kind of were green. You know, he wasn't more green than everybody else there. So it just sucked that they just didn't have a spot for him. And, you know, lucky for him, he actually stayed and interviewed because other people that didn't have anything for just stopped working for him. Like, this dude Midnight, who, you know, was a fucking weirdo. And, you know, he,
who was that?
No, this dude Midnight. You probably don't even know him. He's a pimple on the ass of the independents back in the day. You know, he claims that he was trained by Raven, but Raven, you know, denies, or actually Raven doesn't admit to training him.
He
doesn't deny it either. You know, but he won't admit it. He won't say yes, but he won't deny it either. He's like, brother. Some people, you know, they wanna get trained, and they'll say they get trained by me. But you know, who knows? Is he any good? If he's any good, I'll say I trained him. You know. But I can't do a good Scotty the Body impression, but you know that's as good as
right, right.
But dude, Marino, but like here's something. Marino, you know, think. That, you know, going from, you know, people think that going from the, interview, being an interviewer, you know, he's a pussy, you know, and he really wasn't. He didn't take shit from nobody. He let people know what was up, and he actually defended me not too long ago, like a couple of years ago, it was me, him, and Barr were out at where I lived at a time. I lived down the street from Barr. Like I lived on a corner house. I since moved away from there, but I lived down the street from Barr. He lived like about three blocks away from me, and those times it was really awesome because it was a couple of years, and we had like a real bad snowstorm. We got snowed in. Like I'd go over there, and of course Trent and Johnny were there, and it was just us just hanging out for like you know a couple of days just. Getting all fucking drunk and just watching wrestling and funny movies and just hanging out. And, like, it was like how it was before we all got our heat, you know, with each other or whatever, you know, because it was after the point of, you know, me and Johnny having our heat. But anyway, so it was me, Marino, Barr, and this girl who hung around, who was friends with Barr. I don't know if this was a girl that Barr was dating or what, but whatever. Anyway, so we went to this bar, and it was like closing time in Philadelphia is around 2 o'clock, is at 2 o'clock. So we were at the bar, and it's called Frankfort Avenue, and there's a big strip of bars all around it. And this guy was coming from one bar to the bar that we were at or something, and he crossed the street, and a car almost hit him. And I laughed. It was funny to me. I laughed real loud, obnoxiously. And I didn't care if the dude wanted to fight me or not, but the dude was, like, you know, started to get all fucking big, wanted to fight, like a big badass on me. And Marino steps up in front of him, and I'm like, dude, I can handle this. And he's like, nah, I got it. So Marino had his beer muscles going on, which is fine, you know, but I was just like, you know, I never seen Marino fight. He's told me they, you know, knock people out. I never seen this, so I knew that I could take the guy, but I didn't know. I didn't want Marino to get into a fight or something for me, but he wanted to fight, so he took off his chain. I was like, all right, give me your chain. I'll hold it. If you want to fight, go ahead. So he goes to, like, start a fight with the dude, and, like, he just grabs him. Like, the Undertaker will just grab you by the throat. That's what Marino did to the dude. He started, like, ripping the dude's throat out. And the dude goes for a punch, and Marino ducks it. And he's got the dude, right, like, ready. Like, he's got the dude, like, for, like a STO. And he gives the dude, like, a rock bottom. And he takes
Angelo Dundee didn't teach him that shit.
And, like, dude, like, I honestly probably would have fucking, you know, given him the STO, smashed his face on the ground, you know. But he gave the dude a rock bottom. Smashed his head on the ground, and then he was, you know, punched him, and then it got broken up. Like this was all within like 10 seconds, and it got broken up like right away. But like, and this dude was, he was a good, I'd say, maybe 6 to 7 inches taller than me. And I'm not that tall, dude. I'm 5'9", you know.
Right.
So the dude was like about six, I'd say anywhere between 6'4" and 6'6". This dude was a tall dude, and Marino's only a couple inches taller than me. He's maybe like 6 foot. So the dude had like a good head, taller than Marino, and like, you know, the dude was lanky, and so he could definitely get like a punch in, you know, like before Marino could land a punch, because you know, when you got longer arms, of course, you know, you could swing further. And but Marino just went and took the fucking dude down. It was pretty funny. It was I laughed about it, but I was kind of pissed because, of course, you know, I didn't leave Barr's house until about maybe 8 in the morning, and I went to go, and my keys, I couldn't find my keys, and I must have dropped them in the middle of a fight. But then, like, there were some other girls that I'd met throughout the night, and they were hanging out with us, and I think I gave my keys to one of the girls, and, like, I never talked to the girl. Like, I don't think I got her number, and if I did, then I don't remember the girl's name. So I lost my keys. This is like my house keys, my car keys, my mom's house keys, my dad's house keys to like everything. Just like I was like a janitor for my keys, and I was so mad. So like, you know, I just hope that whoever it was didn't look me up and find out where I live and can break into my house. Not that there's anything, you know.
Well, they never showed up in your house or with your car, so I mean, I guess that's the, you know, best case.
What'd you say?
I said they never showed up in your house or with your car, so I guess that's kind of best case, right?
No. And they, you know, like, and the girl didn't know what kind of car I drove or nothing. I mean, of course, if she watches Judge Judy, then she'll know what kind of car I drive.
Right.
You know?
And they played out, like when Hollywood Squares, when they start up random cars with the keys and shit.
I think
it was that one.
What's that?
Yeah, it was one of those game shows. And they would just hand you a set of keys and be like, go pick one of them five cars, try to start it. If it starts, it's yours and that whole shit.
Oh, really?
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was an old school game show. And they used
to
do that.
I remember Hollywood
Squares.
I just don't remember that happening.
Yeah, I think that was like the finale. It's like, yo, here's a key. There's five cars. You go stick it in there. If it starts, it's yours. If not, you're fucked and you play stupid music.
Yeah, they do stuff like that with like radio shows. Like there's you know, 10 people, the first 10, you know, like 10 days worth of questions, and everybody who answers a question right gets a key, and one of the keys starts a car, and, you know, come on down, and hopefully your key starts a car. You know, somebody that day wins a car. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
How the fuck did we get onto this topic?
No idea, man. Something about Robbie, and then we went from there.
Okay.
So anyway, obviously, you know, this past weekend, and I'm going to lead off it as into some other stuff, but was 2-year anniversary, you know, Trent passing. And, you know,
yeah,
I know
Monday was,
you know,
the 18th.
Yeah. Near and dear friend to you. And, I've been a huge fan/friend type thing.
You know what's weird about the whole entire situation? It's kind of like, you know, like Easter is, like a 3-day process. There's Good Friday. And then there's, the day in between, you know, there's Good Friday. And then the day that Jesus was dead the whole entire time. And then
right.
there was, you know, the day that he rose
Zombie
on Easter
Jesus
Sunday,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, like, that's how it is with me and Trent. Like there's the Wednesday. I mean, it's a little bit longer of a period of time. There's, like, you know, like, what happened was, like, the last time I talked to him was on, like, I believe either a Monday or a Tuesday. And then he died on, you know, they say he died on Friday, but I don't know, because that's the day that they found him. Like, the last time anybody spoke to him was on a Wednesday night. So who knows exactly what day, but they're calling it, you know, that Friday, which was the 18th. That's what they're calling it.
Right.
The day that he did pass away. So, yeah, so, like, that whole entire process, like, that, it was, like, from, like, the 15th until the 18th. Like, you know, that Friday, you know, this past Friday, you know, I started thinking about it, you know, it was like around 9, between 9 and 10-ish or something that I was last talked to him.
Right.
Boom. And, you know, I know I already went through the whole story of how, like, you know, I think I could have.
Of course.
You know,
for sure.
I'm not going to get back into that. But, yeah, it's pretty weird that that's a whole entire, you know, like that that's, like, it reminds me of Easter. It counts a 3-day process. But, so go ahead. What was your question, or what do you want
to
do?
Well, I mean, I think it's obviously crazy that, I mean, a guy like this has been gone for 2 years, and obviously, you know, you're far closer to him and stuff like that. Now, a guy who I know about this, because, you know, Billy had told me straight up that, you know, he had talked to you about this, and you try to keep him cool and all that. And I had talked to Billy Real probably – Probably just shortly after the thing. So probably within the first 6 months of me doing the show.
Okay.
And he gave me, like, he kind of contacted me, like, he seen the name of the show, he seen, like, what I was doing, and was just like, yeah, I went on, da da da. And he was one of my first no-shows and kind of, like, completely blew me off. And I was like, well, he's a fucking asshole. Like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I left it alone. I was like, all right, whatever. And I moved on. And then after I did the first joint with you, Billy hits me up, like a couple days to a week later. And he's like, holy shit, dude. He's like, I just listened to your thing with Burke. He's like, I'm so sorry about what happened in the past. He's like, you're actually a really smart dude. He's like, I'd really like to do something with you, you know. Well, let's talk sometime and set it up and this and that. I don't know what you're doing on this side. It sounds like you're wrestling a velociraptor or something.
Yeah, he told me he was going to be on it. He, because he talked about, like, when I told the story of like, when Trent went, you know, when we went to try to go find CZW that'd be the first time. And Billy,
right.
He was all, he like, you know, and Trent went and got, like, you know, poison oak or poison ivy or something. You know, like, and of course, Billy's all, like, mad, like, oh, you didn't tell the part where I was hooking up with the girl. Like, dude, really? Like, I have to put over that you hooked up with a girl? Like,
yeah.
It's not a put over Billy real story, you know?
Right.
It was a Trent's silliness.
So then from there, I was like, cool. And then it was, like, Saturday. And he was like, dude, he's like, did you check your face? I'm at work. And he texted me because I gave him my number, like, in case he didn't want to call me and set something up. And he really, you know, never hit me up. It was like a week and a half or, you know, a week or so since I gave him my number. And I was like, you know. And all of a sudden he texts me and he's like, yo, it's Billy. Did you check your Facebook message? What are you doing with your phone, dog?
Me?
Yeah, it sounds crazy.
I'm outside smoking a cigarette, maybe.
I don't know if you're blowing the smoke into thing or wrestling a velociraptor or what you're doing, but either way, I'm just...
Does it sound like I'm breathing real heavy, too? Because I had it like, in front of my mouth.
Every once in a while, it's just like...
A lot of people tell me they can't hear me because it hangs down by my chin, and they can't hear me, so I hold it in front of my mouth, but...
You sound good, dude. There's no problems, but...
All right.
So anyway... So then he just randomly, like, texts me, like I said, on Saturday and was just like, dude, it would mean a lot to me. You'd be doing me a solid, bro. You know, check your Facebook. And I'm like, dude, I'm at work. I'll check it when I get home. What's up? And he's like, well, you know, coming up on the 2-year anniversary of, Mike's death. And I want to record something with you and this and that. And I'm like, well, I mean... He's like, I want to pre-record something with you. I said, well, the only problem with that is, like, I really don't do pre-records. I don't have, like, the ability to do pre-records, but I can do a live show any night. He's like, oh, live's fine. I don't give a fuck about calls or anything like that. I'm like, if you want to, I ain't doing shit tonight. If you want to call me, you know, and talk about this and, like, set it up or something like that, we could do that. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. We'll do it tonight. And I'm like, oh, all right then. What time you want to? Then fuck it. So I just went off of that and we did it. And I was just like, wow. And I knew I was dealing with a sensitive situation. I really didn't want to push any buttons or push it to any level. But I knew he had some shit that he was really not cool with, that he was going to let out one way or another. So I just kind of let it be what it was going to be, and I was just like, ah, fuck. Like, I knew getting into it was going to be something, and it was obviously Cashmere was the hot button, and apparently Missy Sampson. And he's like, you know, every time he was about to say some shit, he's like, Nick, I'm sorry. I tried. Nicky,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
I got to listen to it. He told me he apologized. And I told him, he told me he was going to, I said, just keep your bad feelings to a minimum, you know, try not to look like a bad guy when you're saying things, but, you know, there's only so many ways you can say something, and I didn't listen to it yet. I told him I'd listen to it, and I just haven't, and I'm going to listen to it. I was planning on listening to it today, but some stuff came up, and I had to run out, and I didn't have time to listen to it, so.
I mean, I think he was pretty nice, when it comes down to the Kashmir stuff, I think he was pretty nice, as well as saying that he thought that he had a lot to do with a lot of fucking shit that he didn't like. Like, he just said, you know, I think this went wrong because of him. I think this went wrong because of him, and I don't mean any harm to him. And, like, he still said, like, you know, I don't mean any harm to him in the future. I'm not saying I have problems with him now. I mean, he definitely went ballistic on Missy Sampson and what a fat piece of shit rat cunt he thinks she is. But, I mean, that's his business, you know, and you know.
I can't dictate how people's feelings are, but I did tell Billy he shouldn't go, you know, for certain things that he should say and not say. And I didn't say what he should say and shouldn't say. I just told him he knows what to say and what not to say. And I said, just talk about whatever you want to talk about it, you know.
Right.
And I said, your feelings are your feelings, and you know, even if it's bad about me, you can talk about it. You know, people.
No, well, I mean, I just
me
figured I'd bring it up because I knew, you know, you were a big topic of the guy who he was listening to prior to the show on what to, you know, just at least kind of compose himself and stuff like that. And
you probably
helped quite a bit, honestly. He probably would have sounded incoherent if it wasn't for you. So.
Well, I did go through the story of how, you know, the whole entire thing happened, and I did say about how it was Trent and Billy, you know, they were best friends since they were kids, since before I knew them. Like, and when I say kids, they were, you know, I think they met when they were, like, under the age of 10. Like, I really don't know when they met, but they met very young, and, you know, they were friends, and they had a longer relationship in them, and they were both stubborn, hothead people from South Philadelphia, and the South Philadelphia people have a certain attitude to them. That's different than, you know, me, you know. And a big thing that a lot of people say that I've, you know, a big problem of mine is that I am friends and I want to be friends with everybody. I don't want any heat with people. And so I give everybody the benefit of the doubt more than I should. And a lot of people say that I should kind of disregard Billy as a friend, and I have a problem with that because, you know, like I try to look at his point of view on things, and I know that he did get, you know, dicked over for things, but it's not a personal thing where people were headhunting Billy Real and let's fuck over Billy. It just so happened to be, like I mentioned, how it was, you know, Billy and Trent and me until Johnny came around, and then Donnie B put Johnny and Trent together, and, you know, it wasn't anything against Billy. It's just that Donnie's feelings or Donnie's thought for the character involved Trent and Johnny, not Trent and Billy. And that, you know, that kind of got in the way of what Billy and Trent, their little pact that they had, their verbal pact that they had with each other of, you know, we're going to make it to WWF together. And you know what I mean? Like, so that is a slap in the face to Billy. You know, like whether business would have been better with Billy or without Billy, I don't know. Because, you know, business didn't happen with Billy. So you really don't know how things would have been. Who knows?
Right.
You know? And
no,
different people
I hear you. And
you know,
I surely don't know, only what I've heard, but what I could say is, like, Billy's standpoint on the whole thing was not to blame Donnie B, not to blame anybody else, but Johnny Kashmir for politicking certain things to happen and keeping him out of those positions. So that was just kind of his standpoint. Again, it's not your really question to answer or, you know, anybody to defend, but that's clearly the way he's felt.
I don't know. I don't know what Johnny said to people to do things. I mean, if you look at it from Billy's point of view, it's Johnny politics his way to have it be Trent and Johnny. If you look at it from Johnny's way, I was put with Trent, and it was me and Trent, and I had to do what was best for the Backstreet Boys of Johnny and Trent. So, you know, that's where business and pleasure get in, mixed in with each other, and hurt like people, because, you know, it's you know, you can't please everybody, and you know, like sometimes it's just, you know, the role isn't for you, you know, the role's for somebody else. And you know, maybe Billy felt that Johnny should have worked harder to keep us all together. And maybe, for all we know, maybe Johnny did try, but then Johnny was told it's not a thing for Billy. It's a thing for you and Trent. And for all I know, people could have been mad enough at me left and right, and then Johnny could have been like, well, can we use Burke in a different way? And then that's how I got to ride their coattails of being their opponent for a lot of things.
I don't know, that
could have been it. And you know, for all I know, Billy could have handled things differently. Like, what if the situation was this? What if it was you know, like, we're all together, and then, you know, Billy wants to be on some show and Johnny couldn't get him on, and Billy took it offensively and was like, you know, you didn't get me on, so it's your fault. And then Johnny,
I don't know.
From that point, right? Like, what I'm saying is, like, this is a theoretical thing. It might not happen this way, but I'm saying, like,
right.
what if the way that it really happened was Johnny tried, Johnny couldn't do it, so Billy blamed Johnny, not somebody else who said no. What if it was out of Johnny's hands and Johnny tried as hard as he could, but it couldn't happen? Billy blamed Johnny, and Johnny got offended and said, well, fuck you, I'm never going to try for you again. And then it spiraled, and then Johnny never tried for him again. Billy continued to get, you know, taking it personally, and then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then, you know, it blew up to something huge when it was just like one thing, you know, made a spiral out of control. It could have happened that way. It might not have. For all I know, Johnny very well could have politicked his way and said, you know, Billy's on nothing, you know, and, you know, it's either you get me and John, or you get me and Trent, or you get Billy. You don't get all of us, you know, it's one or the other.
Right.
It could have happened that way. I really don't know. I didn't learn politics for a long time. I'm a naive person, and I was, you know, I grew up naive, and I didn't know, and I learned it by getting, you know, fucked over. I learned it by getting told by both Johnny and Trent and Billy and a handful of other people, you know, all told me about how the business works, and eventually I learned. It took me years to realize that it's a dog-eat-dog world in the business of
wrestling.
And it's worse than, like, you could imagine. Like, as soon as you think you understand how backstabbing it is, you find out something else that's, like, even worse. And it's like, oh, wow, like, it goes that deep. And so, like, you know, I was blind to it all, and maybe I shut my ears down and I didn't listen, and maybe I closed my eyes and I didn't see. And, you know, I just went along with the flow with a lot of things. And I ended up screwing myself out of opportunities too because of that, because I didn't know how the business worked. But
all
I knew was what to do in the ring. I didn't know what to do on the outside of the ring. And,
yeah.
You know, I know now. But,
yeah.
You know.
And again, I only know, you know, what I'm told by other people, and I'm gonna, you know, I'm always been one to play devil's advocate, even against my own opinion. Like, sometimes I'll say some shit and be like, why could I be wrong for what I just? And I go back on my shit a lot of time. Like, you know, you were saying, remember the one time I had you on with the PWS thing? I, you know, went against myself last week and told everybody why I was wrong, and. You know, where I fucked up and where I still criticize them for some things, but I think they're really, you know, stand up people for doing the way that they do and coming out the way that they came out. So I only,
well,
you know, I listened to Billy and, you know, I mean, like, it might be right, it might be wrong, but it makes a lot of sense. And he goes way back from, like, when he first met Johnny to, like, everything in the future. Obviously, his mind was made up pretty early, but I don't know. I mean, I just saw what he saw, and
yeah.
I don't know.
Holy shit. There's a deer in my backyard. I never, Holy shit.
Never seen a deer in the earth.
I live in Philadelphia, and now I live in like a kind of like a, it's still a city, but it's not in like a city, but
right.
There's a, like, it, I never have animals like this in my backyard, and I can't believe it. Oh, my God. Okay.
It's like a double rainbow.
I got out of my backyard, and I put the light on, because I just saw it ran, and I have a fence around my yard. It ran to get out, and then it ran into the fence, and it stumbled back. I saw it take a bump. I feel bad for it. Oh, well. It scared the shit out of me. I'm like looking. I'm like, wow, I don't have any dogs, because like, you know, I thought it was a big dog. I don't have a dog. My neighbor doesn't have a dog. Well, like the neighbor does have a dog, but like they're out of the house. They're actually selling the house, so they're in a different house now. So the dog shouldn't have been there, and that scared the shit out of me. All right, so go ahead. All right, now we're back. Okay, PWS stuff. I'm not going to my backyard anymore.
I was just saying, like, the, you know, this, wow, she's still talking about the dog.
Non-existent
deer dog. I'm saying, like, you know, I went back on, like, what I said on some things because I looked into the type of people they were, and I listened to some other things that they said and looked back on where I could be wrong, and I, you know, I admitted that. That's why, like, I, you know, I've always been cool with Johnny, and I'm not, you know, I'm not against Johnny or anything now or anything like that, but a lot of stuff that Billy said, it was like, wow, now seeing this from the other side, never knowing Billy Rail for shit whatsoever, hearing a lot of the stuff that he said, I was like, wow, that, you know, a lot of that shit makes sense. I mean, for a guy who knew Trent, Mike, you know, from way, way early, to seeing how it built up, I was like, wow, I probably wouldn't feel good about that either. And I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to, like, you know, pick sides. And the real tough part is you can't grab Mike and ask him, you know?
No. No, definitely not.
You can't ask him what happened. You know, we'll never know. And even if you did ask him, he might even, you know, sugarcoat things. He might tell lies.
Sure.
You don't know what his thing was, you know, because he tried to please everybody as well. A lot of times, you know,
yeah,
he tried to play good guy for everybody, and I mean, that was.
That's why too. I would rather everybody get their thoughts out and then move on, because it's a war that you don't. I mean, you guys are completely, definitely friends with somebody who's gone now, and
yes.
Why not? You know, on your own fronts, you're never going to be perfect friends with each other, but. You both have legitimate relationships with somebody who's gone. And I mean, the only thing you can do is carry that guy's name on to the best of your ability. That's my message there. And it's just like, well, you know, get your shit out because it's going to have to be said at some point. And then, you know, to whoever it makes it worth it to you, whether it's, you know, your best friend or you want to put it out on the internet or you want to do whatever you want to do, just do it, bury it. And that's it.
Move on. Yeah. Because you can't, like, nothing we do and nothing we say is going to bring him back. And
right.
You can point fingers, you know, people point fingers at quite a few people for Trent going and doing what, you know, led to his death. And, you know, you can point fingers, but nobody held a gun to Trent's head and made him do anything.
Absolutely,
you know?
Not.
He did what he did. And a lot of the things that happened to him were his fault. And he did try. He didn't want to be the person that he became. I know that for a fact. He was,
right.
You know, his mother raised him a certain way. And, you know, it wasn't the way that he led his life to be, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, like his mother did everything that she could to raise a good kid. And, for the most part, she did raise a good kid, but he did things to hurt himself, which inevitably hurt other people, and he didn't realize it until it was too late, and, you know, you know, the ditch was already dug for him, you know, by himself. And he did try to get help plenty of times, and he really didn't want to be the guy on heroin, you know. He didn't want to be the guy doing any of that, you know. It just happened to be that's what he did one time, or couple times, and then it spiraled out of control. And it sucks because, you know, like a lot of people love him, you know, and
absolutely,
you know, a lot of people lost a great person. And that's what I think angers a lot of people, is that we lost a great person, you know, whether he did shitty and shady stuff or not. Like, when it comes down to it, he made people feel good, you know. Like, when you take away, like, you know, monetary stuff, you know, the way he made you feel like, you know, he made you feel happy, you know. And that's why a lot of people are really angry, because we lost a great, you know, person. And that's what a true friend is. Somebody makes you happy. Not the person that gives you, you know, money or clothes or trips to somewhere, a friend to somebody that makes you happy. And
right.
So he was a friend to a lot of people. So, and that's where a lot of this stuff stemmed from. So, right,
you had talked about the psychic thing you were going to do. Can you, you know?
Oh, yeah. I haven't done it yet. And I want to. Like, I don't know if I told you if I went to this before, but I went, I've been wanting to see a psychic because I was hearing Trent after he died. I was hearing him a lot, and I didn't know exactly what was being said, but I heard his voice. And what it was like, it would be like late at night, I'd be trying to go to sleep, and I couldn't go to sleep, and because I would be hearing a voice, and it would sound like the TV's on in another room, or it was outside or something. So I'd get up and I'd walk around, there's no TV's on, nobody outside, you know, around my house at all, but I'd hear a voice. And I, you know, after I went and checked everything, I went back in my room, lights out, laying down, and I'd still hear it. And I'd hear laughing, I'd hear, you know, words being spoken, but I couldn't hear exactly what they are. Then there was like this one day that I was just like, I was crying uncontrollably. I didn't know what was going on. I just knew I had to go and visit Trent's grave. And
right.
I went, and like whenever I would go there, I would always pull up my car, like up, you know, close to his grave, and I'd blast Pearl Jam and on. I was doing that. I did that this time too. And everything I was thinking, you know, or that I was talking out loud to him about, a song would come on and it would have something to do with what I was talking about. And I would put it, the songs I put on was on my iPod. Every single Pearl Jam, you know, CD I have burned to my iPod, and I put it on, like, shuffle, random shuffle. So, you know, it was somehow, like, you know, like, somehow every single song, the meaning had something to do with what I was thinking or talking out loud about. And it was really loud, and I was still hearing these voices. I mean, I was hearing these voices that time, and I'd never heard the voices during the daytime. I never, like, you know, it was always at nighttime. And this time I was at his grave, and it sounded like it was, like, about, like, maybe 200 to 300 yards away from me. And there's, like, a wooded area, and it sounded like it was coming from there. I would hear, it was definitely Trent's voice, and I once again couldn't hear the words being said, but it was definitely Trent's voice. I could tell, and it was a girl laughing, and then it was Trent's laugh. That's the only thing I could definitely make out, was it was definitely Trent's laugh, and the words that were being spoken, it sounded like Trent, but I couldn't hear it. And I was like, this was making me go crazy. And I would look up and I would look around, and then when I would look around, they would stop. And I looked out at the grave again, and, you know, moments later, it would start again. And, you know, like, and then I was talking to him about his mom. I was saying something about, I was like, I have to talk to his mom. I have to. And then, lo and behold, his mom comes walking up behind me. Like, and his mom never stopped. Like, his mom said that she saw me sometimes at the grave, and she would keep on going. But this time, like, she stopped, and, you know, she stopped talking, and you know, and we were talking. I said, I have this, yeah, my iPod on, and everything that I'm thinking or talking out loud, the song goes and, you know, has something to do with that. We start talking about something else, and then the song changes, and the song has something to do with exactly what we're talking about. And it's just like, I think that his presence is really out there. Like, I believe that there's a correlation between, you know, beyond and, you know, current on of this life. And, you know, so I'm going to go see a psychic about it. And the psychic says non-business fees. And the date is July 11th. And I also want to try and see if I can find one of those EVP things that people go on ghost hunting tours with. And they try and talk to the other side. I want to see if I can get I'm allowed to record the meeting that I have with the psychic.
Right.
And I want to see if I can bring this, bring like an EVP so that I can either find one, or if anybody listens to your show, you know, does any of this stuff and has any of it that I can borrow, or give me advice on what I can go out and buy. Like, I don't have a whole lot of money, but I mean, if it's cheap enough, I can buy it. Something that's good, that's definitely going to work. I would love to be able to try and, like, get it, do an EVP thing, try to talk to him while I'm here with the psychic and see if I can get his actual voice to come through and get him to talk, and I'll ask questions. And I'll even ask questions, like, I can ask questions to the psychic and have her answer. So if anybody has any questions that, like, you know, I can
now,
ask
I mean,
for,
My biggest question isn't actually to him, it's to you, is what are your questions? I mean, this is something that's so important, and the things you've laid out there are very profound. Now, going off of that, what are your questions?
Well, I want to find out if there was anything that I could have done to prevent him from dying. Like, I want to know if my feelings on when he was trying to get in touch with me that time, and I only responded to him twice and then didn't respond to his Facebook instant message. I want to know if I would have continued to talk to him, was he going to ask me for a ride, and would I have given him a ride, and would that have prevented him from doing, you know, heroin again? Because as far as I knew, he was done. He went quite a few times and pissed clean for his PO, and went to the when I went to go and I got him into rehab the last time, he pissed clean for the social worker that he had that he went to go and talk to. And so I believe his thing. He was acting normal, you know, he wasn't skipping out and all that stuff. And like when he went to go, he had to go after he got out of jail, he had to go see his PO to explain that he was in rehab and why he was in rehab. And when he was up there is when he met up with his ex-girlfriend, who, from what I hear, the story is that she wanted to get pills. He went to go to the dealer to get the pills, and the dealer was also a dealer for heroin. And apparently that's where he got the heroin, and that's when he shot the last time, and then that's when he died. So I'm wondering, I want to ask him if I could have prevented it. Also, I want to ask if he was really done. Because if he was really completely done, like, if he didn't go, if he wasn't around that, and if he wasn't asked to do it again, like, would he have gone out on his own, or was he kind of, you know, peer pressured into doing it? You know, I want to know that. I want to know if
Here's my thing, I mean, about that first question you got there. Now, I would say, because I've never believed in these people, but, I mean, if it works, it works. I would really hope it does, and, I mean, maybe you can get some kind of answers and something, you know, that, I don't know, I mean, give us more information, make something feel better. I don't really even know, you know, exactly what to get out of that, but what I can say about that is now, I think the most important thing to think to yourself is now whether this person gives you the answer or he's supposedly giving you the answer, you think to yourself if that's something that Mike would have ever told you. So when you ask a question like, you know, could I have done something to save your life, do you think even if he was alive he would tell you that?
Yeah and no. Our last conversation that we had was such a different conversation than we always had. And I think that the reason why is because the last time we talked, he was completely sober. And he was genuine when we had that conversation, and it wasn't all laughs. It was very heartfelt, and I knew, and he admitted a lot of stuff that he did wrong, and it was the first time I got him to admit it, or that he admitted it to me. It was the first time. So I feel that at that time, a new avenue was opened, and I think the avenue was open because he was sober and he wasn't trying to hide being high, you know.
Right.
He admitted all the times that he lied to me about being, well, not all the times, but, you know, that he admitted to me that there's, you know, a lot of times that he lied to me and his mom and other friends about whether or not he was getting high. And, like, you know, I genuinely believed him because, you know, the way the circumstances were going. And so I think that, like, If I asked that question, I think I would know whether or not he was telling me the psychic is a lady. I would know whether or not she was telling the truth of what he was saying by the way that it's worded, because his mother also goes to the psychic, and she said that there was things that nobody knew except for Mike. And the way that the psychic was speaking to her was in the same demeanor and the same words and the same expressions that Trent would use. And it was like such deep stuff that nobody could know except for Trent and his mom and maybe Trent's aunt, you know, who was like a sister to Trent, because Trent grew up with his mom's sister, who was, you know, closer to Trent's age than was to his mom's age. So they kind of grew up like brother and sister. And so I think that when she talks, you know, judging by the response, I'll know whether it's bullshit or it's truth.
Well,
because I always
have
my guards about it.
Well, but still,
I thought that, like, you know, psychic stuff was, like, you know, fake. But I had another psychic very close to the time that Trent died. There was a girl that I hung out with, and her sister was a psychic. And I forgot all about it. And I was at her sister's house hanging out with them. And she kept on looking, like, behind me. And then the girl that I was friends with said, "What, are you seeing stuff?" And she's like, "Yeah." And then it dawned on me, it's like, "Oh, yeah, you're a psychic." I was like, "Can you tell me about my friends?" And she's like, "Friends, like two of them, like one blonde head and one with really long hair." Well, I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Well, the dude with the long hair, he won't get out of my face right now. He's jumping right in front of you and in front of me. And, you know, and the other one, blonde hair, is really reserved and sit in the back, and, you know, he's there and, you know, he wants to talk too, but he can't get a word in edgewise." And the dude with blonde hair is Doug Gentry. And when she described him, and I asked, is it Mike and Doug? And she said they both responded with, like, you know, positive affirmation, like saying yes. And so, and then, like, she talked about stuff that, like, you know, she would have had to really dig deep and get some really good information. Like, she thought, like, you know, in order to know between, you know, me and Trent, or between me and Doug, like, she really had to dig deep, like, if she wanted to try and find if she wanted to know the answer, you know, and, like, really work me on it. So, you know, I really believed it, that type of thing happens. And she told me a little bit, but then wouldn't tell me a lot. You know, she goes, that's all I'm saying. She's like, I can't get too far into it because it'll last all night.
I hear what you're saying, but my only thing is, I think even if you can talk to the people who have passed, I think they would continue to be the person that you wanted them to continue to be. They would be their self. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So now,
you think that, like, that Trent will give me whatever, tell me whatever I want to hear to make
you
feel better.
Well, he surely isn't going to destroy you as a person if you thought you were to blame for him not being here. I don't think alive or gone or anything else, I don't think a statement would be produced by your friend who you've been nothing but a friend to you know, would come out like, hey, by the way, I'd still be over there if it wasn't for I just don't think you're going to get that type of answer, no matter how truth or false it is. I mean, if you do,
like,
I don't,
maybe,
I can't imagine
like
it being genuine.
Maybe if I worded it differently and still, like I understand that there's nothing I could, you know, like, it was completely out of my hands. I wasn't going to be the savior of Trent Ass or Mike Verdi or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
I was never going to be the savior. It wasn't really up to me. Maybe I should word it as, you know, something different to ask about, like, you know, like, if that didn't happen, what would the future have held for you, you know? And from what I gather from his mother telling me, she said if it didn't, she said, the psychic said, if it didn't happen this time, it would happen another time.
Right.
Like, it was going to happen. And this is the way it was going to happen. Like, the same way that he died. If it didn't happen on June 19th, or June 18th, I'm sorry. If it didn't happen on June 18th, then maybe it would have happened on June 26th, or July 19th, or July 26th, or, you know what I mean? So that's what was pretty much told to Mike's mom by the psychic as words from Mike, you know? So
right.
I guess maybe I'm asking for something a little too...
A little too much, I would say.
A little too much, a little too controlling. Kind of like, you know, like you might not want to hear the answer, you know, one of those things. So maybe I should ask a question that's...
But I think, like I'm saying, if you would get something to that negative extent of an answer, no matter how much they want to say, oh, listen, the truth hurts, or you got to really analyze it as the friend that you knew for the amount of time that you knew, not, you know, one person telling you once they're gone, here's what they think. Like, oh, that's a pretty large summary for someone you never met.
Right. I mean, like, there's other stuff that I'm going to talk to her about. I'm going to want to talk to her about, you know, Doug Gentry, and you can talk about people who are alive as well. And there's some, you know, there's one person that I want to kind of know about, you know, that's alive that I don't have any more connection with. I just want to know about them. I want to ask about that, but I'm, you know, I want to record it, and then, you know, if it's something that can be played and should be shared or could be shared, I'll either edit that stuff and, you know, play it for you and let you hear it, and we'll do. We can do a show where I talk about that stuff, or, you know,
sure,
whatever, you know. Just, I mean, there's other questions that, like, I wrote down. Like, I want to know if he, like, there's certain things that have happened I want to know if he's responsible for. I had the smell of smoke in my house a lot, and I don't smoke in my house, and I don't smoke anywhere close to my room. So in order for my own cigarette smoke to go into my room, the way it's got to travel is crazy. So, and this is like a really potent smell of cigarettes, like as if Trent was sitting right next to me smoking a cigarette, or somebody sitting right next to me smoking a cigarette.
Right.
That's the way it smells. And it, like, this is all stuff that's happened in the past 2 years, like, that I've been having a lot of this. I never had stuff, you know, come to me like from Doug, because he was like a really good friend that I lost, but, you know, he wasn't as close of a friend as Trent was, but you know, he was a very good friend, and, you know, there's some questions I'm going to ask about him. But as far as Trent goes, like, I want to ask about that. I want to know if he, like there's different shit that happens with music on the radio and the Pearl Jam, you know, when I'm thinking about things, and, like, you know, there's certain questions I want to ask about that. And the lady that told me about, like, you know, before, the one that I was, you know, the sister of the friend I had, and she was she told me that Trent's way of getting through to me is through, like, music. And, you know, I didn't really lay anything on the line. I didn't tell her anything. I just asked questions and had her tell me. I didn't say, oh, yeah, that, and then this happened. And she was just like, she said that Trent's way to me is through music, and Doug's way to me is through animals. Which is very fucking weird that we're talking about this now, and there was a fucking deer in my backyard. Now that just, like, you know, correlates with each other. So now I got to ask about that. So, yeah, which is weird because Doug Gentry loved animals. And, like, she said his way to get to me is through animals. And Verdi's way was to get to me was through music.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
You know,
I mean,
she was vague with it, but, you know.
I mean, that's great stuff, man. So, yeah, for sure. We'll definitely hear about that. I want to take a quick break, play a song, give everybody a chance to, you know, go get a drink, take a pish, whatever. And, you know, come back. We've got plenty more questions. We'll get back on wrestling. We'll talk some of that stuff. And, yeah, just do this. And then, you know, four and a half minutes.
All right. You got it. All right. Make me too late, but got some crime, got some crime rate.
Left the keys in the van with a guy in East End. Went up in Eastland, shot a policeman. Fuck a peace plan, I'm a citizen by stance. The shit is in my hand. Here's your lifespan. For what your life's worth, this money is twice then. Grab a couple grand and live in Iceland. See, I'm a nice man, but money turned me to Satan. I'm thirsty for this green, so bad I'm dehydrating. Hurry up with the cash, bitch, I got a ride waiting. Shot a man twice in the back when he tried skating. I want the whole pie, I won't be denied Nathan. Maybe I need my head inside straightened. Brain contemplating, clean out the register. Hit before somebody catches ya. Forget the description and sketches ya. The connection with the prime suspect. But I ain't set to flee the scene of the crime just yet. Cause I got a daughter to feed. And $200 ain't enough to water the seed. The best thing would be for me to leave Taco Bell and hit a Chess King. And have the lady at the desk bring money from the safe in the back. Stepped in, waving the Mac. Cooperate, we can operate. Saving the tax. The bitch tried escaping the jack. Ran about a throne, the murder she wrote. You barely heard a word as she choked. It wasn't nothing for her to be smoked. Then I slammed her on the back till the vertebrae broke. Just then, the pigs bust in, getting free. But I'm already wanted for selling keys. And a bunch of other felonies from A to Z, like felonies. So before I dropped to the ground and fell on knees, I bust shots, they bust back. They was wearing a chest, but wasn't wearing a vest. Price triples. I ran up the block.
Yeah. So, yeah, there it goes.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, we're back. So,
Who was that? Who, what artist was that?
That was Eminem back in, like, 01,
2000. Yeah, I thought it was like older Eminem. I thought
it was. Yeah, way, way old. Pre-industry type Eminem. So it was one of my favorite old joints that he did. But yeah, otherwise, I mean, you've done tons of different things. You worked all sorts of different people. Kamala and Jimmy Snuka in the ring with Nick Burke. How'd that situation go?
Well, I love, you know, both of them guys. Those guys are really nice guys. And very, very, very unfortunate thing what's happening with Kamala right now. And I know that they're doing a wrestler rescue. And if anybody can donate, you know, to his well-being, that would be great. Because he is such a nice person, you know. In general, he's a nice, nice person. And, you know, he listened to my ideas that I had, and he liked them. And, you know, he had his idea, and I gave my idea. And then he allowed me to do what I want to do. Same thing with Jimmy Snuka. You know, I was fortunate enough to be able to get the Kamala splash on me and everything. And, you know, I always, you know, want to put the other guy over all the time. When I'm a heel, I always want to make the other person look better, you know, than me.
Right.
So I laid it out for it to be that way, and we did my idea pretty much, and he, you know, with the wig spot, he took it and he amped up the level of what it was. I mean, I think he made it a lot better. You know, he added what he wanted to do and how he saw it, and you
right.
combine them, and that's what wrestling's about. You know, taking the ideas that will work and
right.
and making them work and making them better. And boy, they you know, that worked really well there. And then the thing with Snuka, you know, the big mark for him getting hit in the head by Roddy Piper with the coconut thing. And so I went and I bought a coconut and I bought a pineapple because I thought that the coconut, I was hitting the coconut and there's no way that thing could break. So I was like, you know what, I'll buy a coconut and a pineapple and we'll see what happens and which one we can use. So I took, I bought glue too, like super glue. And so I had somebody at the show saw the coconut in half, and we emptied the coconut out and put the remnants from the inside the pineapple inside of the coconut, and then we glued it back together so that when he hit me, it would break in half and the shit would fly out. And that was awesome. Like, I had somebody roll in the coconut, and then it went between my legs, and then Snuka got it and smashed me in the head with it. And he was so happy that somebody went that distance to do something like that. And I did it for myself, so I could have my mark out moment. And he might because, you know, somebody cares so much to do that. And, you know, like, he just, you know, he gave me a lot of good credit. And, you know, once again, took some of my ideas, and he was an older man and couldn't move like he used to. So some of my ideas had to get scrapped due to his health. But same thing with Kamala. But, you know, they tried their hardest to fit everything in that I want to do. And, you know, pretty much for the most part, the vital things I want to do were used. And everybody went home happy. The fans, you know, me, you know, Snuka, Kamala, you know, it all worked out to make them look good, which is my whole entire, that was my goal, to make them look good.
Right.
Make the fans happy that I got my ass kicked. And, you know, I don't know how if kids these days really know that they can walk away from a show where they don't get their hand raised and, you know, they're not the top talk and still look good. Like, that's something that,
right.
you know, I don't know if the kids these days are taught or they know how to do. And I don't know if I would have been able to have done that if it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago when I was first starting. I believe that I was trained well enough by my trainers
right.
to do that and be generous with what I do so that, you know, it all came out, you know, to play like it played, you know, on the show. So, yeah, they were both like awesome legends. You know, when I tell people that I wrestled against Booker and I wrestled against Kamala, you know, and Jake Roberts, you know, they love to hear it. And of course they want
yeah.
to see it. You know, I never saw me versus Kamala, and I was only managing, I believe, during the thing with Kamala. But I think I was managing Kamala, and then he turned on me, and so, you know, but as far as snooker, like, I never saw either of those, and I would like to see them. So maybe I should try and get a copy of the matches because they were fun to do, and they were definitely fun to watch.
What's your thoughts on Jersey All-Pro and their product, you know, 30 years and your, interactions with them?
Yeah, I love them. I love Jersey All-Pro. You know, they're different now than they were when they first started. Just like, you know, a lot of other companies, you know, they grow. It's unfortunate that I had to make a choice if it was, you know, CZW, Jersey All-Pro. And Jersey All-Pro, they were behind my decision all the way. And that was one company that I was in without the help of Trainer Johnny or Billy. Well, actually, Billy kind of did help me because the reason why I went there was because I had to drive Billy. And I called up, and this was before MapQuest and before GPS and all that. So this was back in, like, 98. And I drove Billy to it was 97. I'm sorry. It was their second show ever, and their first show that they had was in a training facility with a boxing ring, and then their next show was when they started in Charity Hall, and then I had to drive Billy. I called up for directions, and the person I got on the phone was Pierre, who's Johnny D, in Jersey All-Pro, and you know, he said, "Oh, you know, like, you seem like a real nice guy. Are you a wrestler?" And yeah, he said, "Well, bring your gear. If I can put you on, I'll put you on." And, you know, they made a spot for me. And, you know, I did the job, and it was a hardcore job of getting my ass kicked. I think all I got was like a punch or a clothesline, and I did the job. And that's, you know, that's what you did back in the day. You know, now, like, people have their first match in a company, or, you know, this was maybe my third or fourth match ever. And, nowadays, people want to have their match, and they want to sit there and do their finisher, and they want to have a 15-minute-long match of doing all this different stuff and impress everybody. And I went in, and I just did the job. And so, you know, anyway, it was my first time, you know, like I got booked consecutively after that, and Billy got booked, but then, like, you know, there was some shows he didn't get booked, but yeah. I continued to get booked, and I was, like, a regular there. And then Trent started getting used for them, and Billy, you know, started to get used more heavily, and then Trent and Billy started tagging in there, and there were a group called D-Sex, which was my idea, and I told them all about it. It was when DX first started, and I was like, what if we do a group, and it's called D-Sex, and I had the T-shirts made up and everything, but then, you know, they did it. It was Billy and Trent. And that was them doing the tag team, and then that was like our group, you know, like we were known as, like, you know, D-Sex. Like, that was our group of friends. It was me, Trent, and then Johnny came along. He was still part. He was part of the D-Sex group, you know. And eventually, I joined D-Sex by doing a gimmick where I was part of the big unit, and then turned on the big unit. And then after that, I turned on D-Sex, and, you know, it was weird. Like, I was always, like, a mid guy. And I always felt that I was always, even though part of the group of friends, I was always still an outcast of anything that they did. I was still a loner inside the group. It's not that I didn't feel like I was part of the group, but I felt that they had their clique, inside our clique. And I was just a guy who didn't side with anybody. I was just, you know, with everybody. And it was weird because, I mean, it still carries on into my life now. Like, I'm friends with everybody and, you know.
Sure.
So with Jersey All-Pro, I was working for them and then start working for CZW. And then they start to, you know, since they're both from Jersey and they both had a little bit of hardcore in them. Well, CZW was based around ultra violence, and Jersey All-Pro was trying to be a break off of ECW. So since I was working for both of them and they were running shows on like the same night, it became a conflict of interest with the group, with the companies. And so
right.
It got to a point where John Zandig didn't want people doing double shots for both of them.
Right.
And same thing with Jersey All-Pro. Frank didn't want people doing double shots either, but I was allowed to do it because I was booked for both of them at the very beginning. But they didn't want, like, CZW to be using, you know, all of a sudden just start booking some of the Jersey All-Pro guys. And so
right.
CZW didn't want Jersey All-Pro to all of a sudden just start booking the CZW guys and start using them. And since I was with both of them since, you know, they're like, you know, CZW with their, I think I started working for them their second or third show, and Jersey All-Pro, I started working for them on their second show.
Right.
You know, I was like an exception. And also, I wasn't a heavily pushed guy in either company. I was a guy with a secure spot of a mid-carder, and I was fine with that. And
I did get.
If I was like a headliner for either company, and then went and worked for the other one, you know, then you know I was doing jobs on a regular basis for both of them, and I was getting you know, whether I was doing jobs or I was getting put over, I wasn't in like a huge angle really, except for like with my
But if you're one of their main guys, one of the two companies would have told you to make a choice, most likely, right?
Right. And yeah, exactly. They said to make a choice, and I mean they would have said to me to make a choice, but they didn't, and I was allowed to work for both of them, and it was good for me. But it got to a point where CZW wanted to run at the arena. Jersey All-Pro was running at the arena. CZW was still running at the indoor soccer arena, Champs. And so I was booked for both of them on one night, and I was the lightweight champion at Jersey All-Pro.
Jersey All-Pro.
And Jersey All-Pro, it was their first time running at the arena. I won the belt like maybe two shows before then, maybe even one. I don't know which one it was, but I won it at Charity Hall. And then their first show they ran at the arena, I dropped the strap to Low Key. And Low Key had respect for me. I knew that he had respect for me. He actually came up to me right before I won the belt, right before I went out, and he said, it was right before I went out or right when I came back. And he said it in a way where, like, I know he meant it. He pulled me aside and said, you know, congratulations. You deserve it. You earned it. You did, you know, you do a lot in the business, you know.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And Loki wasn't really what Loki is today. He wasn't – he was still becoming, you know, a big star. On the indies, but you know he was rather new, but he was still like fucking awesome. Like, dude, when he did like his first person I see do a backflip moonsault to the outside, he was doing like a battle royal. And when he said he was going to do it, I was just like floored by it. I was like, what? You're going to kill yourself? And then all of a sudden right. Now it's like a normal thing, you know. But he was the first person I see do it. He impressed me. And so anyway, you know, we're at Jersey All-Pro. I'm on pretty early in the card because I'm doing a double shot. I'm working low-key and dropping the strap to him. And Homicide ran in and did the cop killer to me to make me, to make me lose the belt. Well, I know I was booked for CZW, but I wasn't. They didn't know who they were going to put me in with. It just depended on what time I was getting there. So they said, we'll just put somebody in with you probably in the second half of the show. It turned out to be this dude, Boogaloo, I believe it was Boogaloo, on a tryout match for CZW. And that's why I was using CZW a lot. When there's a new guy coming in, they want their tryout, put him in with Burke, see how he goes. If he can get the crowd behind him or, you know, work the crowd, you know, he doesn't have to worry about his match because, you know, Nick Burke can work a very easy match and just let him do his thing, get the crowd behind him, see how the crowd reacts. So that was my job, you know, in CZW. And I went and worked on Loki, and very beginning of the match, he took me down and gave me forearms to the head. He said, cover up, make sure you cover up, because I lay him in, and I knew it. So I was like, okay. I covered up, but still, he knocked me out with one hit, woke me up with another. And it just so happened to be that that's what, and like, it just happened to be that he hit me, you know, a certain spot, and it happened. He didn't, I believe he didn't mean to do that. He wasn't going to, you know, he wasn't shooting on me. He wasn't doing it on purpose. It was just, this isn't ballet, you know? And, so I got, you know, concussed, and I got concussions quite a lot. I've had a lot of concussions, and I'm sure at that time I was getting a lot of concussions. It happened to be like, you know, if 3 months went by and I didn't feel effects of a concussion, I knew something was going to happen eventually. Like, I could time it, you know. It seemed like every few months I'd get a concussion. And so it just happened to be my time, and I needed to get a concussion back. And either he concussed me or he re-aggravated a concussion.
What?
I said either he gave me a new concussion or he re-aggravated a concussion that I had before.
Okay.
It was one or the other. So, and that's another thing. I don't know if I constantly got new concussions or if my concussions were all re-aggravated. It could have been one long, you know, 5-year concussion for all I know. But anyway, I got knocked out and I came to, I was at the arena, and that's in South Philly, and it's right over the bridge from about a 15-minute drive away from CZW. So I went to CZW,
right.
And I was so out of it. Like, I didn't know what was going on. I got told that my match was with this dude, was this guy Boogaloo, was part of a tag team, but with this other guy named Lowrider, and that kid actually he recently worked against Ryback in WWE about like maybe 2 months ago or so. He had a WWE match with Ryback.
Who was that?
This dude, his name used to be Lowrider. And he would get on the, if he got on the microphone, he has a lisp, and when he speaks, you know, the lisp comes out. And apparently that's like the gimmick for Ryback, is whoever works and cuts a promo. And apparently
right.
This dude cut a promo with, and he had like a lisp or something. And I thought that was like a shoot against him, that you know, Vince McMahon wants him to get on the microphone with his lisp and talk, but. You know, anyway, he did the job for a while back. So anyway, I worked his buddy. I worked his tag team partner. And I forgot everything. Like, we talked about the match, you know, and normally, you know, I can, you know, you tell me a match, and normally I got it. And I normally call things out in the ring, but if you got to do a match, it's always easy enough for me to really remember. There's not too much up and downs as far as, like, you know, the flow of the match and all that, so... Like, when I was talking to him, I was going over with him, and then, like, a mere 5 minutes later, I forgot the match. And then he's like, are you okay with this? I said, yeah, I'm fine. Went out and did the match, and I forget the whole match. I forgot the whole entire thing. You know, I feel so bad that I kind of, like, ruined his tryout. And John Zanding knew that I was, you know, concussed. I mean, he knew that I was, you know, fucked up from the Jersey All-Pro show. And then he said, that's it. No more double shots for anybody, you know, with any company. I don't care. If you're working for me, you can't do double shots. And that lasted like two shows, and everybody else started doing double shots again. You know, but, you know, as far as the, and then it became like a heated thing between Frank and John, where they personally didn't like each other. So then it became a point where you had to choose between one or the other. And so when you had to choose between that's on TV, getting your bookings all over the world, and then another company that is getting a lot of backlash from the governor of the state at the time.
Right.
Chrissy Whitman was giving Jersey All-Pro a whole bunch of shit and trying to shut Jersey All-Pro down. And so I was all right, well, if I have to choose, I'm going to choose the company that's putting me on TV, the company that's, getting me bookings all over the world and all that. And Jersey All-Pro understood that. And I left on good terms. And I think I went back and worked for him a couple of times. Not a permanent spot, just coming here and there. Maybe I might not have, I forget, you know, but, I did. I worked for them about 4 years ago. I worked for them again, like two or three times. Working for Jersey All-Pro was awesome. I loved them. You know, they gave me an opportunity to, I worked their first anniversary show, and they had autograph signing with like fucking Stone Cold and Afa and Yokozuna and dude, like all these people who were like fucking big names. Like Stone Cold was at the biggest that he was, and he was doing an autograph signing, and I'm a junior in high school, and that's what my weekend is, to go and work a show. And then, and I got asked to walk Stone Cold up to the hotel room, and so I'm in there, I'm in the in the elevator with Stone Cold Steve Austin, walking to the room, the other kids, you know, in my high school, you know, because I'm in high school at the time, junior, and the other kids, what are they doing? You know, they're, I don't know, they're probably getting into drugs or whatever they were doing, you know.
Right.
And you know, like I thought that was like the best thing in the world, and I had a match against Adam Flash, and a lot of ECW guys were on their first anniversary show. That was the first time I met Adam Flash, and developed a great relationship with him. He's still one of my favorite people in the business, one of my really good friends in the business. In high school, that's the opportunity that Jersey All-Pro gave me, you know, to be a high school kid having a spot like that, like, you know, hanging out with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And there's a story that comes from that, too, Stone Cold Steve Austin, that Flash Wheeler, I don't know if you know who Flash Wheeler is, he tells his version, and of course Billy Real tells the Flash Wheeler version, which is a direct, like, you know, slap in my face. But this is the story that happened. All right? I walked him up to the hotel room, and we're in the hotel room, and it was Fat Frank was there, and some of the other people from Jersey All-Pro, some of the other main people from Jersey All-Pro were there, and they had WWF on, like Superstars or Saturday Afternoon Show, whatever it was. They keep on showing promos of Stone Cold, you know, and Stone Cold walks in on that, and so he goes right to the TV and looks at it. And so Fat Frank's asking, he goes, yo, ask Steve if he wants a beer. I was like, no, he's watching TV. Ask me if he wants a beer. I'm like, no. He goes, just ask him. It's fine. You know, I'm the low down totem pole, so I got to do it. So I go and ask. I'm like, Steve, do you want a beer? And he goes, nah, I got to work tonight. I don't drink when I work. And then he's watching the TV show of him in the ring, down in beers. I'm just looking at him. I look at the TV show. I'm like, all right. Walked back to Frank Franklin and said, he said no. Now, Flash Mueller tells the story that when I went up to Steve and asked him, when I asked Austin if he wants a beer, Steve Austin's reply to me was, nah, kid, if I want a beer, I'll get it my damn self. So, that's a funny dude. That would have been hilarious if it happened that way. So Flash really wasn't there. That's not the way it happened. So I had to put the kibosh on Flash Wheeler's side of the story. And so that's my feelings on Jersey Alpha. I think they were great. Now where they run, like, you know, they ran one of their last shows, and now they're doing Jersey Shore Championship Wrestling.
They ran one show in the past, you know, 12 months, and their Jersey Shore thing, they're doing Seaside and Tom's River and that type of thing, and then I guess, you know, they'll get back at Jersey Alpro here and there. I just thought,
from what I understand is their money guy is no longer feeding money, and apparently Jeff, his name is Jeff, he apparently has the copyright to name Jersey All Pro Wrestling. Like that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that he's no longer funding the company because they were losing money, and he didn't want to lose any more money. So then they tried to do it, still Jersey All Pro Wrestling, but they tried to pay for it with the fans that came in. You know, pay for it without somebody backing it, just pay for it with the door, and that flopped, and so now they just ran the one show, one last show, saying it was possibly their last show, and then now they're doing Jersey Shore Championship.
The only weird thing I see about that is, like, they went into that show saying, like, last show, like, anniversary show, and yeah, we're closing out with this, like, last Jersey All-Pro, last Jersey All-Pro, and then fucking Fat Frank gets in the ring during the show. That was at CCW, but, like, he gets in the ring at the show and says, yeah, well, you know, the summer's hot in this building. We'll see you back in September, on September such and such. It's like, dude, I could swear you pitched this is the last show. And I'm not hating you still having a business or something, but you really?
I think that what he meant, and maybe he didn't say, if, you know, my conclusions are right, that what he probably meant was, we'll see you back here, and we'll be under a different banner. You know, the name of the Jersey Shore Championship Wrestling. I believe.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe Jersey All-Pro will resurrect and whatever and have another show in September. And I don't know. It's just like, there's so many different wrestling companies, and everybody spawns off and does, you know, a sister company of every other company.
That's my next question. And it goes pretty deep from back then, like, to all the different things you've said where, you know, a wrestler had to pick between Jersey All-Pro and CCW. And clearly, neither one of them are making you rich, but you still had to choose because these companies were just trying to get that same dollar at the same time. And it still goes on to these days. Now, I mean, what's your thoughts on, you know, feds taking talent from other feds and the whole cross-promoting thing?
I really wish that was still territory based. I wish that it was protected. I wish that not everybody can be a promoter. I wish that not everybody can be a wrestler. Nowadays, you know, you have a million wrestlers and a million federations, and you still have a declining fan base. So to make the money, it's really tough. And if Nick Burke was a star and the fans want to see Nick Burke, and, you know, they can only see Nick Burke at CZW, then they would come to CZW and spend their money at CZW. They wouldn't spend their money at NWF that wasn't booking Nick Burke. But now that if there's CZW and PWU and another company that's running in the Philadelphia area, and Nick Burke's working for all of them, then they're probably not going to go to all three of those shows. They're probably going to go to one because money is tight for everybody these days. And now it's like there's no, you know, special way of being able to see your favorite wrestler at one show. Except for if it's in Maine.
But how that, does, I mean, you should know from your side, how does said wrestler make money if they only work one show?
You don't. You don't make, that's why I don't like to wrestle anymore, because there's no money. I can't charge $150 to go and wrestle, and it's not worth me to go and wrestle for $50. So I'm not going to wrestle, but other people will, and other people will wrestle for free because they think that if they go and they wrestle for all these companies, they're going to get better, and they're going to get seen, and they're going to get a crowd following, and they're going to be able to go to WWE or TNA or wherever the next step is that they want to go to. But that's not the case. If you still, if you were a wrestler and you wanted to get into WWE and you had one match a night for the weekend, you know, on Friday and Saturday,
right,
you wrestled, just one match, you would get enough experience and you would get enough stuff for your promo tape to be able to send it to WWE as you would if you worked three matches a night. Now, when I did double and triple shots, they were a good hour away from each other normally. Sometimes they're about a half hour away, like, you know, the Jersey All-Pro thing and CZW thing, but that was different because they were both top indie companies, you know, with their own following. And so the people who would go to Jersey All-Pro would see me in Jersey All-Pro only. They wouldn't see me. Well, I mean, some people would go to both CZW, but the majority of the fans would go to only Jersey All-Pro, and the majority of the fans would only go to CZW. Now, my feeling is that instead of having five different companies in an area, have one. And then, just, you know, like, you know, I know that the promoters all want to do their own thing, and your ideas matter.
Yeah, well, which one of the promoters in this, you know, area is actually going to say, hey, you know what, you seem to have this under control, I'm going to go ahead and call it yours, and I'll move out of state even though I live here. Like,
what? Yeah, it's not going to happen. Right. That's where the whole territory idea comes from. That's why I think that, you know, territories are the smart idea. Even, like, I mean, like, Billy Real rants and raves about a union, and I say it's never going to happen. I think it's a great idea. I think that there should be a union. There should be a set of rules of, you know, people allowed to have a promoter's license in an area. You know, if you have a Pennsylvania promoter's license, then you should also be only allowed to run within a, you know, 1.5 to 2 hour radius of a certain area. And that should be it. And, you know, like, and that should go all over the whole entire country and maybe the world, you know, but you can't enforce it because of equal opportunity. You can't, you know, you can't tell Joe Schmo that they can't have their promoter's license when they have all the credentials, because then you're playing favorites and it's against the law because you're telling them no. You know what I mean? And it sucks, but it's bad for business that everybody can run a wrestling show, because, you know, Joe Schmo will run a wrestling show, and Joe Schmo doesn't know shit about wrestling, but he'll get a, you know, 20 guys to go into a ring. He'll rent a ring and, you know, get 20 guys to go into a ring and play wrestler. Whereas, you know, DJ Hyde, say what you want about him, but DJ Hyde will run a wrestling show with professionals and put on a good show. But because Joe Schmo ran a shitty show, now the fans don't want to go see that horrible product anymore, so they're not going to go to any wrestling show. So they're not going to even want to go and support DJ Hyde CZW.
Right.
So now everybody loses money because Joe Schmo fought for equal opportunity, you know, and ruined the business. Now, what if I was to go and be a start a plumbing company, and, you know, Joe Schmo also has a plumbing company, and now I went and you know, took my plumbing company and did the plumbing work. I don't know shit about plumbing, but I went and I said I did. And I went and I did this guy's work. Well, now he doesn't want to hire me anymore because I did a horrible job. He doesn't want to hire Joe Schmo anymore because, you know, Nick Burke did a horrible job.
Right.
But he'll hire somebody, you know, the McDonald's of plumbing, whatever that is, you know, the worldwide known. And that's the only person that's going to get all the work because the mom and pop, you know, Nick Burke company did a horrible job, which put a bad label on Joe Schmo's company for plumbing. You know, that's the best way that I can say that it is. It's like when somebody makes something look bad, then everybody
does.
Just like, you know, like I could put on a wrestling show and make a lot of money as a fundraiser for a school, but they had a bad thing with like Steve Corino ran the show at a wrestling school. I mean at a high school, and stole all the money. Now I'm not saying Steve Corino ever did that. I don't know. I just use his name, but Steve Corino just now put a bad name on wrestling. Now, I'll be honest with you. Steve Corino never put a bad name on wrestling in my eyes. I think Steve Corino is a great wrestler and a great business guy and all that. So I'm going to be clear about that. Maybe I used the wrong name. I'll use my own name.
Use Joe Schmo, and then you're like, let's talk about running shows. Steve Corino.
I use Steve Corino because he's a name in the wrestling. But,
I hear you.
He's a wrestling promoter, too. I didn't even think about that. He promotes wrestling shows. Okay, we'll say...
Say Balls Mahoney, Rana.
Balls Mahoney, honestly, Balls Mahoney, as odd of a person he is, I think that he would go into running a benefit show with the best intentions for the benefit. As weird of a guy as he is,
now we're going against everybody's credibility. Like, okay, now what do you think about? what am I gonna do?
I love, man, we're in Boston doing a double shot. Me, Balls, Teddy Fine drove me. I remember Teddy Fine drove me, and I was rooming. My room was right next to Balls, and we had some time to kill, so we went to a local JCPenney just to kill time, local mall, and then went to JCPenney.
Yeah.
And I go look in the clothes, and I'm like, you know what? I want to do something for my own laughter. I want to make Balls make me laugh. So Balls, like, I'm just looking at, like, underwear. And he's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I was like, I'm looking for a certain underwear. He's like, what are you looking for? I was like, I'm looking for a thong, a man thong. I want a thong. And Balls Mahoney's not quiet. I think even if he whispers, you know, somebody half mile down the road will still hear him. So he's like, we'll just ask somebody. He goes, where can I find a man thong? And he, you know, Balls Mahoney screaming, asking, you know, somebody, do you guys sell man thongs around here? It was the funniest thing in the world. Having Balls Mahoney, you know, big, bad Balls Mahoney asking for a man thong. I died of laughter. I didn't want a thong. I just said that to fucking say the word. It was so funny. But
all right, so
that's the whole thing with wrestling. Yeah. It's the equal opportunity to everybody is what's ruining wrestling. That alongside with the internet, and I said it before about how
the
everybody
MMA?
Thinks that they what?
You said MMA?
No, the internet. MMA
internet.
You know what?
The internet.
The internet making everybody think that everybody else is on the same page, you know, as the wrestlers, like, because now everybody has equal opportunity to be able to talk to everybody. That ruins wrestling. MMA.
Now, before you go there, the internet. That to me is like a very interesting topic too, because when it comes down to it, it's so much easier if you're from California, Japan, anywhere in the world. You know, you can really get your name across to somebody in so much faster than like a tape trading or I mean, how much harder was it before the internet to even get yourself known? But again, of course, making money is harder. So
it's a double-edged sword there because, okay, I can go and tell everybody who Nick Burke is, but also,
yeah,
but also you can get a DVD of Nick Burke, you know, from your friend, and rip it onto YouTube or whatever, you know, viewing sites there are out there. Rip it on there, and now everybody can watch it for free. So now there's not one DVD, you know, you're not only missing out on, like, you know, one DVD because of tape trading, you're missing out on 30 DVDs because of tape pirating. You know, before it was like your friend might get a CZW show and you might get a Jersey All-Pro show and you guys trade it.
Yeah.
Still taking money out of our pocket, but it's not as much as it is when now all you got to do is type in CZW, June 23rd.
But I mean, the music, you know, business has gone that way, and everything else is. You know, the movie, the music business, the wrestling is, you know, on a far, far smaller scale than, you know, the movie and music business. And
right.
I mean, rightfully, I mean, hard, so, they're going to hurt off of it. So is,
yeah,
everybody
it was
else.
Hard,
but
it was hard to make money. It was hard to make money before. Now,
of course.
Now that
where does it go now?
Yeah, now it's even less. It's like, I don't know. It's the decline is just so, it's so hard, like, to really make money. And I had a shouting match 2 weeks ago with DJ Hyde on how to make money for your company. I told him my theory that I told you during the first interview of,
right,
you know, you make your shows unique and you make your tapes or your DVDs unique for sale and all that, and he just didn't get it. He didn't see where I was coming from, and I don't know why he didn't see it. He might not have seen it because he doesn't want to, or he didn't see it because he's already tried. I really don't know exactly what his theories are, but either way, he didn't, like, he doesn't see it. And the way I feel is if you have your IP, your iPay-per-view,
right,
and, you know, do you display it for everybody to be able to watch? Now, the fans aren't going to go to see it in person, but they're still going to be paying the same, what, $15, $20 that they would pay for a ticket?
Yeah.
But they'll be paying for the IPPV. But now it's like you have less people in the crowd. And when you're wrestling in front of nobody, just your energy is just shot, you know? Like, you have nothing to work off. It's just, it's not as fun, you know? And that's where, like, good matches come from the good work in the ring. Good matches come from the good crowd reaction, and good matches come from the commentators. Not the other commentators, you know, if you had the commentator on the show, you'll be able to sell the DVDs. CZW DVDs sold a lot better when it was Sean House and Eric Cardullo than they did with quite a few of their other people doing the play-by-play. And
I would agree.
Eric Cardullo was awesome at play-by-play. Eric Cardullo, I might not have been the best pound-for-pound technical wrestler in CZW, but John House and Eric Cardullo made the fans think that I was because they put it over that way, because they were that good. And, you know, the lack of training that people have in all facets of pro wrestling is also
ruining
the business.
For sure.
There's so many different things contributing. And it all goes to equal opportunity, the internet, and partially MMA. Now, MMA, you know, is 100%, well, as far as we know, 100%. Okay. Now you watch it and you know that it's more real than pro wrestling. So,
right,
you know, pro wrestling, although, yes, we do hit each other, like, there's certain things that are predetermined. And I shouldn't have to tell you that, but I'm saying it because there's certain things that are predetermined, whether it's the way that the moves go, the finishes, what have you. And in MMA, you don't have that. So you have a very similar looking ring that they fight in. You know, they have an octagon and we have a four-sided ring. And they have a cage.
Yeah, they had an octagon.
They have a cage. And so, you know, it's a very similar looking thing. However, the fighting and what goes on in the middle of that ring is so different. And it looks more real from MMA. And it looks that way because MMA is not as predetermined as pro wrestling is. So
right.
When you have the pro wrestlers out there trying to pass off what they're doing in the middle of that ring is real, and, you know, the fans know that it's not, to try and convey that, some fans feel insulted. Well, I go into the match knowing that the fans, for the most part, know it's predetermined, except for the little kids. You know, maybe they still believe it, like they believe in Santa and the Tooth Fairy. But, you know, like, it's for the most part, like the adults that are there, they know that it's a predetermined situation. Although it's an athletic presentation, it's still a predetermined thing. So yeah. I go in there, like, knowing that they know that's predetermined, but everybody, just for the sake of the wrestling art, everybody is suspending their belief of what's real and what's not.
Sure.
And, like, I don't do what I do to insult anybody's intelligence and try to make them think that's real. I do what I do to go along with it and entertain on the basis that it's everybody knows it's predetermined.
Right.
But, you know, you also know that, you know, your favorite movie is predetermined. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
you know, like, you have to go on, you have to go in with that type of idea. It's a movie, an action movie, I guess, that's live. It's an action play, you know? That's the best way I can put it. And
right.
People accepted that and learned to enjoy an action play. And I think that'll be a lot more acceptable to everybody to be a fan of it, you know? But people looking like, oh, it's fake, I don't want to watch it. But then they'll go put on Family Guy.
But people have known that for,
it.
You know.
Yeah, they've been. So, I mean, there's so many things that ruin the money aspect of pro wrestling. And, you know, you can't pinpoint it. And that was, actually, it was something that was discussed in WWE's roundtable, and I think it's still on if you have the WWE on demand thing. You know, it's Mean Gene Okerlin hosting it, and
you know,
Ric Flair is talking, Jim Ross I believe is there, Mick Foley, Taz, and Michael Hayes. Yeah, and you know, and that's one of the things they talk about, defining moments in pro wrestling. And somebody brings up when Vince went and said that it's a predetermined sport, you know, when that was a turning. And they discussed a good 5 minutes of it. And it's pretty cool, like, if you have a chance to watch it, you know, to see what their take is. And it's hard. It's hard to be able to pinpoint what the decline of pro wrestling really was.
Yeah.
All we know is that it was hot when it was NWO with in WCW, and then there was DX and The Rock and Austin in WWF. That's when it was really hot. And then, like, you know, when those things started to sizzle out, like, you know, when The Rock left and Austin left and DX kind of, you know, disbanded a little bit, and, you know, Shawn Michaels left because of a back injury. Wrestling declined then. When NWO started to gather a million people and 90% of the company was NWO, that's another part that made it decline. You know, it can only be cool for so long, I guess, until you got to change things around. And, you know, rode the horse for so long and that was it. You know, so.
Yeah.
You know,
I want to get to a couple things, like, on a side note type thing, because I just wanted to get them in this week and, you know, shit that I had on my mind. And Well, first off, I got to say that my Miami Heat are up 111-89 with like 5 minutes left in the fourth.
Is this game five?
We're up 3-1. This is going. This is curtains right here. So
it's Miami Heat, right?
Yeah. Pretty ridiculously fucking hyped while I'm like watching this out of the corner of my eye going, yeah, motherfucker.
I'm sorry that I'm taking it away from the game. But
I would have been watching this game doing the show by myself either way, man. But I saw The Dictator the other day. I thought that shit was fucking hilarious.
What did you say?
The Dictator.
What's that?
It's a movie with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh, yeah.
Funny fucking movie. I seen that shit the other day.
I've seen it when I was in the movies, but I forgot all about it. And then I rewatched it because it's been on TV a bit. Bruno, I don't get offended by things. I just don't know how to react to some of the stuff.
Now,
that happens.
That's the only one I haven't gotten fully through. I've watched Borat like a million times, and this one was really, really funny. For some reason, I can't get through the whole Bruno. I keep having to try
Bruno,
to
react. Bruno, for lack of a better term, it's offensive, but it's hilarious. And like there's some things on it that are just disgusting.
He's over the top.
I wouldn't know. I wanted to say it with like my girlfriend at the time, and you know, she knew what my humor was and everything. I could be me around her, but if I was watching it with like a different girl and I had to act a certain way in front of this girl, I wouldn't be able to. I think I would have to act like, oh my god, I can't believe that, you know, because of the stuff that happens. It's hilarious. I just can't believe how far he goes in that movie. And if The Dictator is anything like that, I definitely gotta see it.
Yeah, it's good shit. But the other thing I've been seeing continuous commercials for, and I've seen the preview for that too, and you know, at the movie. But the Abe Lincoln versus the Vampires movie, fucking Abe Lincoln. I mean, I really have no reason to watch this, so it's not like I'm going to. But here's my thing on this: is like the dude has like crazy Mortal Kombat moves with an axe. Like he's twirling shit around like a Shaolin monk, and we're supposed to believe this is like back when fucking Abe Lincoln. Like, oh, okay, I guess that's when that started. They just didn't film it as much.
Right.
And then my other thing is, I think, okay, we'll get past all that. My fantasy situation for how this movie ends, and I haven't watched it, haven't heard about it, you know, how it ends up, but my fantasy situation for how this ends is he supposedly kills all the vampires. You go like, you know, they do like a flash forward. He gets, you know, put as president, and then next thing you know, he walks into a movie theater. It's fucking shot in the back of the head, and fucking vampire does like a keg stand on his skull. That would be my perfect ending. I don't know.
John Wilkes Booth
he's a vampire.
A vampire.
That was his reason.
That's great, dude. That's awesome. I'm like, now, dude, if I go and see this, and then that's the ending.
You're gonna be looking for it. Like, wait for it.
Right.
Like, oh, this ending sucks. But
I was about to tell you, I kind of know how his life ended. I was going to tell you, I know a little bit about Abe Lincoln.
Yeah.
he was a wrestler. He was a championship wrestler. Abe Lincoln.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Way back. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. But, yeah, I thought about that a couple of times, and I'm like, eventually someone's going to come up with this idea, because obviously he's dead and it wasn't, like, a nice ending. So he starts getting into action movies. Eventually someone's going to go, hey, you know what? Someone should shoot that fucking guy in the back of the head, because that seemed to have worked, you know?
Well, that's how they kill the vampires, right? Well, now, in the movie, is he a vampire, or what's his role? Is just a vampire slayer?
I only saw the commercials, but I think he's just like a vampire killer. Like, his vampire killed his parents or some shit, and he's like, I'm fucking taking them all out. They're all finished now. And he's got fucking Street Fighter moves now. I don't know. have no idea. I just found that shit weird as hell.
Yeah, I do want to see the movie. I'm going to say it for sure.
Well, I wish you luck.
That and the movie Ted.
Ted?
Ted? The one with
the
bear?
Yeah, I played the Fuck You Thunder like 4 times tonight, but I'll do it again. Yeah.
Fuck you, Thunder! You can suck my dick!
Because we're playing the Thunder tonight.
Yeah, dude, man, like, when I saw the previews for that, I think Sammy Callahan had it up on his Facebook. And I watched it. And like, at the very beginning, it was very misleading. I thought it was going to be like a cutesy movie. And then that part happened.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as they did the Thunder part, I think that was
the
part
Fuck
that,
You Thunder.
Yeah,
definitely
I think
it
that's
out.
when you know, it starts to turn around and start seeing how crazy it was. And, like, that just sold me. I couldn't wait. Now, there's another movie that's very similar to that. It's called Paul. It's about an alien. And the
I didn't
the guy
see that, but...
Mm-hmm.
I know what you're talking about.
It's on HBO a lot now. Probably it's
that
on
was
HBO
good.
Because this other one's coming out. And the guy... Who's the voice of it? Of Paul. Of course, his name slips my mind. People's names slip my mind when I need them, and I just look like a moron because
right.
I don't remember people's names. He plays the role of a pot smoker a lot in movies, and he recently lost a lot of weight. But I don't know. You watch it. Go watch it, and you'll see.
Right.
You'll know whose voice it is as soon as
Jonah Hill?
No, but he's in movies with Jonah Hill.
Seth Rogen?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's exactly who it is.
There you
yeah.
go.
Thank
he's
you
like,
for that.
Who smoked weed a lot and lost weight? Like go.
There you go. You know your people. Yeah, so that's who it's Seth Rogen and it's really funny. It's about an alien. I really don't know exactly the whole entire premise of it because I only caught like maybe like 20 minutes into it and I always have to leave to go somewhere like 20 minutes before it ends, something like that, you know, so I never really catch the whole thing, but I think the premise is that it's an alien that is being sought after by somebody in the U.S. government, and then, you know, the guy has two cops looking for the alien as well, but the two cops don't know what they're even looking for. He just knows that they have to be looking for the guys who were helping the alien, you know, escape. And the guys who were helping the alien escape, they're, it's the redhead dude from Shaun of the Dead, the funny, the comedian, and then, like,
okay.
Another British actor. And it's really good. You have to watch it. It's on HBO. If you have HBO, you know, watch it. It's on like
all right.
Like every other day it's on, you know, so.
It's funny shit, know. Though, or?
Uh-huh, yeah.
All right.
It definitely is. It's really good. I do think that probably Ted is going to be funnier than it. Most likely because... Probably what they did was they took, like, the dude who wrote, the guy who wrote Ted is a dude from Family Guy, who wrote Family Guy, right? Probably what happened was he saw that and he's like, oh, I know I have a similar idea, but I'm going to use the same premise, I'm going to tweak it this way and make it better that way, you know what I mean? So it's like his chance to make it better, and it probably will be better, but... Still, Paul is a very good movie. Unless it was written by the same person. It could have been written by, for all I know, written by the same exact person. Who knows?
Nice.
But, you know, there's your movie.
movie wrap up. All right.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on, like, the current WWE, you know, that TV product stuff going on?
I think they can be a lot more entertaining. I think that there's a lot of cheats in the company that are trying to walk around eggshells. So there are things that are happening, and a lot of people have their own ideas of what they want to do. And in order to appease the five people in charge, the 10 writers, you know, that they have per show, are writing stuff to try to please too many people. Not only the people that the people that are in charge, but also trying to appease the advertisers and the different groups that they work with. And it's so hard because, you know, you have anti-bullying campaign going on. And the sponsors of pro wrestling. Well, pro wrestling, it needs a good guy and a bad guy. And the good guy, I mean the bad guy, has to be a bully at some point in some manner, the way, you know, for something to happen. So the bad guy can't go full bad guy. You know, he has to go semi-bad guy. But when he goes full bad guy, then all of a sudden, you know, he's not politically correct, and that's not good for business, you know, in everybody's eyes. So it's like, you know, you have to appease the smart mark internet writers on top of that. So there's all these people you have to please, and you can't. Like, you can't do it successfully. So they're trying to be safe. And then you have people who write the stuff, and some of those people aren't wrestling people. Some of those people are just Hollywood people. And, you know, like, dude, they had Michael Hayes and Triple H writing the shows, I think that it would be a million times better. But they don't. They have, you know, some people who are sort of wrestling fans, and they have people who are not wrestling fans, and they have people who are wrestling fans and people who have been in the business wrestling. So they have this combination of people, and they just clash because, you know, people who have, you know, no idea about wrestling shouldn't be writing for wrestling. But from what I understand, there are people there that are writing wrestling that are not, you know, wrestling people. That's what I understand. I don't know the exact names of everybody who is a writer, but what I'm told, that. But I think that they're wrestlers. The people who perform for the most part are very good, and I think that Vince wants a certain look, and there's not enough people in the world with that look that are also wrestling fans and also good wrestlers. But there's a ton of people who are, you know, that don't have the look that I think would do a whole lot better in those positions. Like, there's a lot of heat on Randy Orton now because of his situation, being that he got suspended and, you know, whatever. But you know what? He's a great, great wrestler. He's a great performer. He knows the business. And, you know, I don't care what kind of attitude he has. When he goes out there and he's in front of the camera, he does a good job. You know, like, what's his name? Cody Rhodes. Great. I think he's just awesome. But he's not.
It took a lot of gimmick away from him, but otherwise.
Yeah, well, they
that shit that was working, and they pulled it from him.
Well, yeah, because what happens is they think, okay, we're going to. I believe this is their philosophy. I could be wrong. But I believe their philosophy is we'll give people a gimmick and a character and a prop until they get over. When they finally get over, we're going to take that away from them and let them just be themselves, and then, you know, they'll stay at that level. Well, I don't think that they really sometimes can stay at the level, because the tool that they use to get to that level was, you know, whatever gimmick they're doing, like whether it be a, you know, the face mask thing and the bags over the heads, or, you know, it'd be the white, you know, Intercontinental Championship belt that, you know, he was doing. And I talked to him about that white Intercontinental belt, the old school one. I love that belt. I am such a mark for that belt. That belt and the $1 million belt, are like, and and the Eagle belt, you know.
All right.
Actually, all the old school belts that we grew up on. Actually, I love them all, but the white Intercontinental belt I thought was awesome. And I was there in November, and I had the Survivor Series, and then Raw and SmackDown the next day, and so he had the belt, and I marked out for him. I was like, dude, I used to mark out for that belt when I was a kid. I was like, I'm so happy he brought it back. And what he told me was because I wanted to do that so bad, and Vince was so against it. He just didn't like it, and I don't know what the reason why it was. I think it's just Vince was like, you got rid of that belt. You got rid of it for a reason. You don't want it no more. I think that was probably Vince's reason. But he's like, I fought for it so much, and I'm so glad that it's working because I fought for it so much. And, you know, so it was his idea. He wanted to do it. And I just thought that it would be awesome if they did something between him and Dustin. Like if like, you know, they had to be him and Dustin, and they tagged, and Dusty was their manager, you know, and they did that. And then give him the belts for a bit and have him do a run and then split them up and have brother versus brother. Like, it would be awesome, you know? Like, Dustin is such an awesome wrestler, too. And, you know, them working with each other and then working against each other, I think it would be just, you know, fantastic. I think that the fans would love it. I think it would definitely sell a lot of money. But,
nice, sir.
You know, we won't, you know, we'll never see it, so who cares?
You know, it's cool.
I was watching the Dusty Rhodes, like they have like a Dusty Rhodes story of Dusty Rhodes thing, and that's
right.
Actually on too on the on demand. But I know that they put it out as a DVD, and they're just playing on demand for WWE, and they show Dustin from back in the day. Now, if you look at Cody Rhodes and you look at Dusty, you don't think they look like each other. But if you look at Dustin and you look at Dusty, and you're like, oh yeah, I can see the similarities.
Right.
And if you look at Dustin from back, like when he first started and he was working a program with Dusty, you look at Dustin from back then when he first started in WCW and he was doing his program in WWE with Dusty, you'll see that they look like you see the facial expressions and all that, or the faces look the same between Dustin and Cody.
Right.
That's what, and then that's where you can see like the correlation between all three of them, like how they all, you know, goes from one to the other, because they had different mothers, Dustin and Cody. I believe they had different mothers, from what I understand.
Oh yeah, okay.
So
yeah, crazy stuff. But
I have I just sent Black Cheese to WWE on Monday and Tuesday. I don't know if I ever told you I have a. I stay in touch with WWE and I refer people to them to take a look at.
Right.
And
right.
I've been working for Jesus for about a year. Like, I've been trying real hard. And finally, they booked him. And, like, he had workouts on Monday and he had workouts on Tuesday. And he impressed the people there. I can't get into exactly what happened, but it was all, like, if I say it was positive, like, that's just, like, not getting enough credit. So he did very well there. They liked him. They really liked him a lot. He got a lot of good feedback from Regal and different people there. And
awesome.
He did get put on SmackDown. He's going to be on SmackDown on Friday night.
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night he did,
Ryback.
He was a job for Ryback. And, but, like, don't base what his future has to hold based on his match at Ryback. It's just, like, he...
Right, right.
Like, the story that he told me of what happened, like, on Monday night was, like, it made me really happy. When I heard the story from Tuesday, like, it's just, like, there's going to be, like, nothing holding this dude back. The only thing that's going to hold him back
that's
is if
awesome.
He gets hurt, you know? So look for Black Jeans, you know, and hopefully he gets signed, and he'll be the second person that gets signed. Because I got some other kids signed, but you know, he's somebody that nobody knows. And I got him signed, you know, a while ago.
All right.
So
yeah, I was gonna bring that up, and you know, it's crazy. The one thing, like one of the things that stuck out, you know, one of the first things was definitely, you know, awesome. You know, I can't wait to see the dude on TV on the Friday show, and you know, I hope, you know, things go well and he gets noticed. And then after that, I was like, you know what? How come three guys, you know, including G's, who's been multi-time champion in GCW, why don't they promote that shit at all? Like, it hit nowhere near the website. They've had three dudes on there that were CCW wrestlers. They even say that, you know, even if you say former CCW star or, you know, former junior heavyweight tag team, I mean, like, why would you not use that to put yourself over as a company? Just to say, fucking, he used to work here. Look at him on TV. Like, I don't get it.
I don't know. It's bad business.
That's
easy to hide. I don't know why he doesn't do it. I would have been all over it if I was promoting anybody, and I, you know. And I know that, you know, I know that DJ has done theories on wrestling, on what works and what doesn't work, but like, this is one of those things that, like, you can't bypass. Like it's exactly like you're saying. You know, you promote it. Like, and whether G's works for them now or not, I know that he has an open invitation to always work for him.
All
right. Whether business standards are met between them is, you know, is up in the air. But, you know, like, when you have somebody like Jesus, like, you know, you kind of, you should, he should be a top guy in that company, and he's not, and I don't know why. And it's kind of like how, like, when I was working for the company, I was always in mid-carter, but I was the only one there getting WWE shots. You know, whether, I don't care if I was doing the job, I was still being asked back all the time, and I was, like, one of the top guys being asked back, like, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I had an open invitation from people to come back, whether I was invited or not, like, on both Raw and SmackDown. I was allowed to come as I pleased at that time, and I normally always got put on TV. So, you know, like, I don't care if I was doing the job, and actually that ended up biting me in the ass by always being on TV, but, oh well. But that's the thing with CCW, they should promote it, and every company, whoever uses Jews, should all promote, you know, hey, this guy, Black Jews, you know, he's wrestling under a different name, but he's going to be wrestling WWE SmackDown. Maybe, you know, DJ Hyde's like, oh, well, I can't promote it because, you know, he does the job. But it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It's on TV. It's international, you know, promotion, you know?
All right.
I can't give a good answer. And, like, did they talk about, you know, what's his face? Did they talk about Sami Callihan recently going to WWE?
Right.
You know, I don't know if they did or not, but they should have, you know, because Sami Callihan got a look. I don't know what came of it. I haven't talked to him since then. They have Moxley there, who's eventually going to, you know, he's doing great there. They love him. From what I understand, they loved him since day one. You know, so, like, you promote the hell out of it. You know, you constantly talk about, you know, follow John Moxley under the name of Dean Ambrose in FCW, follow him into his WWE career. But if you constantly say that you have people who are getting used by WWE and they're working for your company, then people are going to come and see who's next on their journey into WWE. That's the way I think.
Yeah.
You know, that's I think that would sell. It's definitely not going to hurt you. You know what I mean? Like, you're producing, you know, wrestlers that are getting looked at by WWE. So, why don't you promote? Because people love being the first guy. Oh, I loved him before he was in WWE. You know, people love doing that. I loved this rapper before he was famous, and I loved this, basketball player before he got in the NBA. You know, people love
him. Right, for sure. Yeah, it makes
and
a lot of sense.
It's bad business to not promote him. But there's a lot of stuff there's a lot of
stuff. Far from competition, because it's a long way from being on that level.
Yeah, WWE is not CZW's competition. CZW's competition right now is, honestly, CZW. What I think. They're on a level of their own, and it's up to them to be able to make themselves have a good business. And, you know, that's up to DJ Hyde on the decision that he wants to make on what's good for business and what's bad for business. And if he thinks it's bad for business and, you know, everybody else is good for business, he's got to be thinking, you know?
What's your favorite matches you've had?
I liked my feud that I had with Josh Prohibition. I liked that feud. That was one of my favorite feuds. My favorite, I had this match that it wasn't CZW, and it was for Ricky O in back in 07, 06 maybe, and it was in like a police athletic league sponsored thing in the Badlands in like Brooklyn or something, like, you know, real bad area in New York, and it was all black people, you know, all black kids who never really get to see wrestling, but the whole place was packed. I was first match, and I wrestled this dude, Dave Greco, and we had, you know, first match. It was very easy, simple, you know, like every very, you know, easy match to do. I was a babyface, he was the heel, and we were opening the match, so we didn't have to do much, and we really didn't do much at all. And it felt like it was like we were back working in a territory, and you know, when I went over, I won the match, you know, and when I won, I couldn't. It took me like 5 minutes to get from the ring to the locker room because all the fans were like, you know, hoarding around me. They were so loud and energetic the whole entire night they were, but like during my match, it was really loud and energetic. And I was able to call spots from one corner of the ring to the other, and you know, they couldn't hear. You know, it was so loud. It was awesome. It was like the best feeling. And you know, it was such an old school, simple, easy match that just told a great story and didn't do much, but it was, you know, like to the standards of wrestling today, you know, the indie guys and what they do, it didn't do much at all, but, you know, it's what wrestling should have been. And, you know, that was like probably my favorite match ever just because of the feeling of it. I had some good matches with Trent, you know, I had so many with him. So to say which one was good, I my favorite, I really don't know my favorite, but I know working in, I worked against Nick Cage for the first time in CZW. It was my idea, and I got power bombed off the top of the concession stand through a table, and I was doing softcore Nick's foot then. And we had a tables match, and it was my idea, and they rushed, of course, John Zandig rushed this. I told him, like, yeah, no, I'll take a powerbomb off of that to end my feud with Nick Cage. And he's like, oh, okay, cool, you're doing it next month. I'm like, what? Like, I said I'll do it for the end of the feud, and we haven't even started the feud yet. We, you know, had a little bit of, you know, maybe once or twice I went interfered with his matches, you know, over the course of a year. I did, like, once or twice. 6 months apart, but nothing really that much that I did all that, you know, much. But the match itself is like, you know, the first time I ever gigged, and I only gigged like maybe 3 times in my life. So it was the first time I gigged, and, you know, it was I pulled a lot out of Nick Cage that Nick Cage didn't even know that he had, and I taught him a lot about character. We didn't do a million crazy spots. I involved Ty Street and Trent Acid and Johnny in the match, but you know, I involved them in a way that Nick Gage looked strong, but they still look strong, and I still look strong. But of course, I get powerbombed off the top, and that's not enough. It has to be bringing back Wife Beater too at the same instant. So as you know, now Nick Gage goes to the table off of the thing with the choke bomb, and off from Wife Beater, and that kind of cancels out how my powerbomb was, you know, off of the top of that concession stand. So it kind of took the heat away from me. So, but the match itself, I thought the match was a very good, entertaining match. It went beyond people's expectations because of what happened during the match. You know, because people expected it, you know, to be whatever, and then it went, you know, 200% better than that. And then the promo after, I thought was fucking great. And, you know, I was out of it, you know, you had another concussion, because I got hit over the head with the chair, and Nick Gage isn't too light with the chair shots. So I had another concussion, and a lot of people loved this promo. And they won the tag team belts that night, and I walked in. I'm pretty sure it was that night. And I walked up to them. It was outside, out back of Champs Arena, and I said, you know, oh, congratulations on winning the heavyweight championship belt of WWF. You know, it's great. And they're like, what? You know, and like it was just all off the cuff, and I just told him, I said, you guys cut your promo, tell me what you want my cue to be, and I said, I'm going to do this. And you guys just go with it, and I went and I told him congratulations on winning the WWF championship tag team championships. I said I got to go home. I got to catch the very last episode of 90210, and of course or something, and that was like you know, that episode was a good, you know, couple months before then or a couple weeks before then, whatever, and I go to get into a tractor. I'm like, where's my keys? I can't find my keys to go drive a tractor away, acting as if it was my car. And, of course, describing the promo doesn't do it justice. If you can get a chance to find it, it's hilarious. Such a funny promo.
Cool.
Another one of my promos, like I guess you can say, that I liked. I did this promo. It was with the guys who, there are two new guys. One of them is now, he's Joe Gacy is one of them. And the other one is, I forget who I did it with. I think I did it with one of the Spanish kids that was in his, you know, class, I guess his wrestling class.
Cologne?
I think it was Cologne. It was the Suck My Dick promo, where I was, you know, guiding them to be, you know, wrestlers and everything. And they lost. And as their penance, you know, in order for me to forgive them, I wanted them to suck my dick in the middle of the ring in front of everybody. And I built that so good. Is that one of the Cajun tests, I believe? Maybe it was like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And I built it so well. The crowd bid on it. I was undoing my pants. I had my belt undone. My pants were about to come down, and thank God they had the cue and they knew what to do. And thank God they didn't want to rid me, because I don't wear underwear. And I almost feel like the next step would have been pulling down my pants. So if they didn't do it right then when I told them to do it, you know, I would have been fucked, because I would have been butt naked in the middle of that fucking ring. And so thank God. But the things I said, the timing was perfect. The crowd bid on it so perfect. They were so, like, hating me, and they were so shocked that I was about to have them suck my dick in the middle of a wrestling ring in front of the crowd. Like, it was nuts. The crowd, and then they were on their knees, like, you know, it looked like they were about to suck my dick, and they pulled my legs out from me and beat me up. And that's the way the promo was supposed to go. And I knew that was going to be good. I just didn't know how good it was going to be. And that was, like, such a great promo. And I never did see it. I just remember the feeling of it. And actually, G's like brought up to me last week. He said, "Hey, when was that?" He asked me when it was, and you know, it reminded me of like I had to go see. So if you have a chance to, it was one of the Kid of Deaths. I know it wasn't last year. It might have been 2 years ago. It might have been 3 years ago. For all I know, it could have been 4 years ago. It was when Joe Gacy and like Carlos Colon, or not Carlos Colon, what's his name?
Alex Colon.
Yeah. When those two first started wrestling, so it was like whenever that era is, whatever that year is that they first started wrestling, it was that Tournament of Death or Cage of Death, and you know, that promo is awesome. Like, you gotta watch it. And people don't do promos like that no more. You know, it was selfless to get somebody else over. Nobody does that. I loved my match. The first time that I worked there at the arena for CCW, our first Cage of Death, it was a three-way, me, Nick Mondo, and Adam Flash.
Right.
I thought that was a great match. I really did like that match. But I will tell you this. I never had a match that I was 100% happy with. I never thought that I had a good match in my eyes. I always, because I'm so critical of myself, I always see so much that I could have changed or I should have known to do differently or known to do better. So, you know, as far as me having a perfect match, I don't think I ever did. But I know that I've had great matches, and I forget a lot of my matches too. I had some good matches with Z-Bar. Like, he was awesome. Like, for his size, you know, like, things that he did, you know, for his size and all that, the way he moved, he was very good. And he got, you know, he understood the it in wrestling. He still understands the it in wrestling. I had some great matches with him. Say was my favorite match. I really don't know. I do know I loved my feud with Josh Prohibition. I wanted it to go
right.
further, but, you know, it didn't. So,
Do you remember what your worst matches were?
Oh, jeez. I had a lot of them. I had a lot of them. Jeez. I don't know. Like, I really can't say it was my worst match.
Have been like just one experience or, you know, match you went out there and just, you know, left the ring.
It
was just God damn
it. I know that the match I was talking about earlier on, that I was, you know, that I worked, that dude Boogaloo for his tryout match. I know that was a horrible
right.
match. I just don't remember it at all. I don't remember that night, I was out of it. But I know that was a horrible match. And I could definitely say that was probably one of my worst matches. And it was by no fault of his own. It was all my fault. I know there has to be a bad match. Like, I worked this match for PWU at World Gym in Northeast Philly against this dude. He wore a mask with, like, flames on it. And it was just a really bad match. The dude just sucked, and he couldn't listen. And it was just a bad match. I forget the dude's name. KJ Hellfire. That was his name. KJ Hellfire. And for PWU, and it was just a bad, horrible match the whole way. And I'm just sitting there like, it was an easy match. Like, all my matches were easy, like, you know, for the most part. There really wasn't too much, like, you know, difficult things in my matches. I worked Greg Excellence, and, you know, it wasn't a bad, bad match, but it could have been a lot better. Just the tone got offset, and this was recently, like within the past 2 years, the tone got offset because there was a problem with the microphone, and, you know, the microphone was part of, you know, the whole promo thing was part of the match, and there were certain things that kind of got fucked up because off the gun, it was dead, you know, so, and that was for Force One. So, yeah, I mean, as far as bad matches, probably the KJ Hellfire match is probably my worst match. I'm sure other people will sit there and say, oh, this is a horrible match, too. Trust me. I know everybody else has another opinion about a horrible match, and they're probably right, too, about it being a horrible match. But as far as I can, remember and recall on the spot, that KJ Hellfire match was just shit.
Do you think any of the indie companies out there are doing it right? Promoting, running a company, overall?
I can't give an honest answer because I don't follow any of the indies anymore. I'm disgusted by it. I go to indie shows, and I want to leave very close to halfway through the show. And it's not because of them, it's because I'm depressed about a lot of things. It's indie, and it's not necessarily the companies. It's the whole entire thing of what it used to be and what it's not. And I go there with expectations of something, and it's not good. Like, I just don't agree with the way wrestling is these days. So, say who's doing it right. There's a couple different ways of right. Like, you could say NWS. I think they have to change the name, but Joe Panzerino's company is probably doing it right with the wrong people because, they're successful. They run a lot of shows, but their shows are, based around, Tonight Only. They run their angles from night one to night two, or maybe just they run their angles throughout the whole entire night, and that's it. And they move over to the next town, and then they run their angles again, kind of like the way a territory would do from one with an angle from one territory to another. They do it right that way. They do a lot of good promoting, but they I just think that they don't use top notch talent. So they put on a family show with some talent is great, but then there's some talent that's horrible. So it's Ring of Honor, honestly, they're doing it right. I mean, I don't know if you can really consider them a true indie because they're so far ahead, but in all honesty, they pretty much are an indie because they don't have people making a living off of their I guess they have some people that are, but they don't have everybody making a living off of their thing. Then again, I guess you would call TNA in India as well, if that was the case. So, I guess we'll take out Ring of Honor, TNA, and WWE out of that equation of wrestling companies. So, who does it right? Like, I really don't know exactly, in my mind, what's right. I don't think anybody really does it fully right. And the reason is because everybody tries to please everybody. And the people who do know how to do it right have just gotten fed up with it. Like there's a company in New England area. I even forget their name. If you told me what it was, I'll tell you. Yeah, that's it. But there's a company out there that does it. That definitely does it right. I never worked for them, but I do know that they do a hell of a job with their promoting. They do a hell of a job with their shows. They do a hell of a job with doing things. Correct for the wrestlers and the fans and the company. I just forget who it is. And then there's a company out there in New York that I worked for. Jesus Christ. I'm so bad with remembering names on the spot. Jesus Christ. And there's a company out in New York, and I used to work for it's actually pretty cool. I did Nick Burke and Nicky Benz for them. And then at one time I had Nicky Benz managing Nick Burke, which was awesome. I had just somebody else. I just the promoter up as Nicky Benz, and the fans didn't even know that I was Nick Burke and Nicky Benz because I was on different parts of the show, like first half. And then when I had Nicky Benz manager Nick Burke. It was awesome. And I forget the name of the company, and if I don't forget the name of the company for any reason other than I get a brain fart whenever I gotta remember the name of the company. And I'll probably remember it as time goes on, but
right.
For right now I forget the name of the company.
No.
But I know that they do, right? So there's a couple companies up there in New York and you know, New England, Massachusetts area. So I know they do it right.
I don't know much about the New England scene, but it's like the computer wasn't
broken. I'd be at my computer right now typing shit in and figuring it out, but
right.
My computer's broken. My computer won't even turn on. So.
Yeah. As you said, it is getting late, and I, although I know I can conjure up some more, we've done almost 3.5 hours now, and I figure probably wrap it up for tonight,
right.
And then I gotta work tomorrow, and we'll get back at it any time, brother.
Yeah. Well, what we could do is, since I'm sure a lot of people will want to know about the psychic reading that I had about Trinacid.
Absolutely.
If anybody has anything, just hit me up on Facebook or.
When are you doing that?
July 11th. So
okay.
If you can send me the stuff before, let's say, July 8th, so that I can make sure that I have enough written down in a correct form so that I can, do everything right. So let me know by July 8th. Anything anybody might want me, like any ideas or anything. And I'm not going to say I'm going to use everybody's. I'm not going to say I'm going to use any of them. But I'm definitely going to take a look at any ideas anybody might have. And, whatever. And after I do it, we'll figure out a way and we'll talk about it.
All right. Awesome, man. Yeah, definitely. Right. You're welcome back anytime, dude. And, yeah, man, take care.
Thank you very much. Take it easy. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. There we go. Another great, great, talk with Nick Burke. He's just a great guy to talk to. Really enjoy his company on the air. He's got a lot of knowledge of the business and a lot of things to say, and fuck yeah. So, Saturday, 2 days away. Well, now technically 1 day away because it's Friday at this point. You got Tournament of Death 11. This is honestly my favorite show to go to, period. The reason is because, I like wrestling as much as I like deathmatch wrestling, but the thing is the atmosphere to this show is to be matched by nothing. It's just unbelievable. And you're going to see, the most hardcore, the most crazy, ultra-violent stuff that you've ever seen before every year. You can look at some that they were like, oh, that was a weak Tournament of Death. It was still a blast for me. I've never had a bad time at a Tournament of Death, and this one is going to be no exception. I'll be there front row. I've been hyping the show and all that, so everybody just go czwrestling.com. You check that shit out Saturday, I think 2 p.m., Townsend, Delaware. If you can get there, you won't regret it. You really won't regret it. It's ridiculous, fucking fun, and check that out. I'll give a full review on the show next week. Check out Two Moms, One Show. I put that on Wednesday, and that's Nina and Natalie talking some stuff, So there's that. What else happened? I think that's about it. Little bits and pieces of Raw that I liked or whatever. It's really not even worth bringing up. So, I think I'm going to wrap it up. Let me see if I got a song to play me out. I think I do. Play this joint.
I know we had to do a remix, right?
Look at this man I get more butt than ashtrays. Fuck a fair when I get mine the fast way. Ski mask way, nigga ransom notes. Far from handsome, but damn a nigga toast. More guns than roses, poses shaking in their boots. A visible bully, like the gooch disappear. Vamoose, you whack to me. Take them rhymes back to the factory. I see the gimmick, the whack lyrics. The shit is depressing, pathetic. Please forget it. You're mad cause my style you're admiring. Don't be mad, UPS is hiring. You should have been the cop, fuck hip hop. With that freestyle, you're bound to get shot. Not from Houston, but I rap a lot. Pack the gat a lot, the flame's about to drop.
Pick up a brand new baby, yeah. Time for new baby.
No rap, no crap, you bore me. One to grab my dick, too lazy, hold it for me. I'm straight that brick, bust a head straight and drench. I'm everlasting, like it's so on protest. A tech nine, when I rhyme, looks like crime, word is mine. Your album couldn't fuck with one line. It's been 3 years since your last year, but now I reappear, your heart pumps fear. To your gut, did your girl's butt. I scraped it, shaped it, now she won't strut. I smash teeth, fuck your beef, no relief. I step on stage, girls scream like I'm Keith. You won't be around next year. My rap's too severe, kick it bad flavor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cut off the brand new baby. Yeah, time for new baby.
Time to burn, to explore. The flavor in your ear is the voice shout. I make out, I make all the rappers have doubt.
Right.
You're fucking with the wrong clan and the wrong man, that's it. Now you got to get your dome split. I'm going into my next sack with my jet. Take off my hat, yes, I'm just cool like that. The dangerous, the ruggedness from the Flatbush Abyss. BLS 97 kids bastard it. I'm going to live long in this rap gang. Niggas know my name, Joe Poppy.
Got him in the flame, you're jingling, baby.
Blow tissues, skeevy, delicious. Give me goose, goose, love me good. Damn, holla to Hollywood, but is he good? I guess like the jeans, flavor like praline. Sick daddy, I mean, Papa love it when he does it. Niggas buzz it. But tell me, was it really just the flavor that be clogging your ears? The most healthy behavior is to stay in the clear. It's all for you, it's really all for you. Punch back, close your eyes, try to munch that. Oil up your ankles, let your Tim's tap. Bite the flavor, it reacts to your nose cap. Word to mama, a tongue kiss a piranha. Electrocuted barracuda, I'm here to bring the drama.
Yo, 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 flavor's getting your rat ass green. Bust the vibes, about to bring the noise on the beat. Let me loose up the belly of the beast. Everybody, hey, hey, hey. You better believe it, bust the rhymes to break me. About to whip the try, I say, yo, yo, hey, hey. I split your face and give you stitches, so niggas and bitches let the ass on fat bitches. Wait 1 sec, and I get down and roll with the heavy wood connect. Who's the sharpest ground now?
Don't you get the switches, Greg switches every time. Bring it bitches when I'm running the back. I know one thing the whole world is expecting is how we all connected. To break fool on the same record. 5 new flavors on the beat, feel the fucking heat. I really think you should be cheap while we blow up the street. Instead of copping, please just freeze. Maintain the focus while we smoke. When I get down, I disappear. Reappear and blow up everywhere.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town, and it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.